Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
So we woke up this morning to discover that there are nearly a million potholes in the United Kingdom. This is an absolute disgrace. It's not nearly enough. Come on, Britain. Come on, you guys, with your 4x4s. Come on, you lorry drivers, with your juggernauts. Potholes. We need more of them. They're fantastic.
Call 0344 499 1000. Text 87222. Text costs 25p plus your standard network rate. And text tweet us on @TalkRadio.
Potholes are nature's speed bumps. It's as simple as that. We spend a lot of money putting down artificial potholes when Mother Nature is actually trying to do the job for our councils free of charge. Who hasn't bumped over a speed bump a little bit too fast and slowed down because that's what speed bumps are supposed to do? There's an old joke that goes along the lines of, we've got a speed bump outside our house, but it doesn't work. If anything, it slows you down. As if anybody is stupid enough to think that a speed bump is supposed to speed you up. It's not supposed to slow you down. And most of our little suburban roads where children are playing on their bicycles and their scooters and with their footballs, if only they could, if it wasn't for the traffic. They are going injury-free back into their houses, largely because the roads are full of potholes and therefore the cars either can't go down the road, or if they do go down the road, they travel at a safe pace because of the potholes. I was listening to Jamie's excellent show this afternoon on this radio station, and I heard a petrolhead driving expert who was jumping up and down about potholes and what a disgrace it was and how councils had cut their costs in using cheap materials when they made roads years ago. I don't know about any of that. What I do know is that we need to look at the other side of an issue like potholes and look for the positives. So many of us are so easy to rush to judgment and find ourselves enjoying self-righteous indignation because there's something out there that we can definitely all moan about. We can stand at the bus stop tomorrow morning and we can moan about the fact with anybody we're standing next to that there are too many potholes in the country. Well, whoa! Hold on! Hold on! Let's just look at it from the other point of view. Just stop and think. Potholes do slow you down. Did you know that the difference between the impact on an individual of a vehicle travelling at, say, 20 miles an hour compared to 30 miles an hour is enormous? 5% speed difference can result in a 10% less likelihood of fatality. So you do the maths. We don't know how many lives have been saved by potholes. We don't know how many proverbial little old ladies with their Zimmer frames have been at least spared a shocking moment because the traffic outside their house, the traffic when they're trying to cross the road anywhere, is just that little bit slower because the surface of the road has been slightly damaged by Mother Nature.
0344 499 1000. Text us 87222 or tweet us @TalkRadio.
I mean, you see what we're doing here. Potholes make you pay attention. The biggest danger to so many people when they're driving is that they're not concentrating. They're listening to the radio, they're fiddling with their sat-nav. They're switched off completely and they're having a mental rehearsal of the argument they're going to have with their work colleague on their when they get to work, or with their spouse when they get home. And they're, sorry, didn't see you. But when there are potholes in the road, you're constantly vigilant. Why? Because you know that having your springs replaced, having your suspension repaired, is extremely expensive. And so you go more slowly and you drive carefully around potholes. I have a theory that some motorists are so cautious about spending extra money on their car that that's the reason why they don't use their indicators when they're going around roundabouts. They don't want to have to stand the expense of buying a new bulb for their indicator. I'm serious. Potholes. Let's look at it from the other point of view. They're fantastic. Motorists. You might be a motorist. You might be shouting at the radio that potholes are a pain in the neck as far as you're concerned. But listen to this. Potholes discourage cyclists. And what do motorists dislike more than potholes? It's bloody cyclists, isn't it? And because of the potholes, because potholes are more dangerous to cyclists even than lawful drain grills, which are set the wrong way so that a racing bike's wheels could boom go down them, or manhole covers, that more and more cyclists are being scared off the roads to where they belong, on the pavements, next to pushchairs and prams and children on their scooters and mobility scooters. That's where cyclists belong. They can do less harm there and they are at less risk to themselves. The law can't cope with this, but potholes will help. Potholes, fantastic. We've not nearly enough of them. And the final point is this, and I'm serious when I say this. I spoke to somebody at this radio station about this earlier on and they thought I was having a laugh, but stop and think. Potholes are good for the environment. Our wildlife is struggling. We're cutting down grass verges. We're filling up ponds. We're getting rid of bird baths because we're worried about cats getting the birds or rats getting the bird food. So where do our birds get their drinks? Where do our frogs go to lay their spawn? The stream has been dug up by the farmer. The pond has been dug up for gravel. Mother Nature is not stupid. She's watching our every move. We're covering her with tarmac that she doesn't like and doesn't want because she can't breathe. Every single pothole you look at is Mother Nature, Gaia, Gaia, telling us she needs to breathe. She's getting like that woman who was painted gold in Goldfinger. She's being starved of oxygen by all these roads that all these motorists with their juggernauts and their 4x4s think is their right. Well, Mother Nature's fighting back, and we should be proud to be on her side. Potholes. Fantastic. Do you own a 4x4? What are you doing at home? Get out there. Drive it up and down your road. Do your duty. Make a pothole tonight.
0344 499 1000. Text 87222 or tweet us at Talk Radio.
Yeah, I know. I mean, on the other hand, yes, potholes can be dangerous. That is extremely unfortunate. There have been accidents that have been linked to potholes involving cyclists. And there's that moment, isn't there, in Groundhog Day. Do you remember when the salesman comes up to the main character, the weatherman, and there's an altercation and then they have it again and again and again. And every time Bill Murray steps off the pavement into an icy pothole. So, yeah, I mean, they cause inconvenience. But is that such a bad thing? Do you really need to be at work at 9:59 a.m.? You know, if you slowed down, wove around the potholes, got to work at 10:02 a.m., would the House of Cards fall? No. I would like them to do the statistics on the number of accidents that take place between 10 to 9 in the morning and 5 to 9 in the morning, because people have got to be there at 9 o'clock and they're running late, and ditto 5 to 10, 10 to 10, people running late. I'd also like the statistics on the number of white vans and trucks associated with building construction work who come tailgating you at 4:20 in the afternoon because they packed up at 4 and they can't wait to get home for their fish fingers and chips. But back to potholes. They can be dangerous. They can be unsightly. There are one or two things. No, there aren't. There are thousands of things prettier than a newly laid tarmac road. And a pothole, yeah, a little bit like the surface of the moon. But on the whole, I say potholes are fantastic. We need more. Reminder of our contact details.
0344 499 1000, text 87222, tweet us at Talk Radio.
Let's talk to Cozzy, who's called the show. Cozzy, good afternoon.
Hi, Tommy.
Hey.
Tommy, I think they're wonderful, mate. Because when I walk my dogs, I've got two Doberman dogs, when I walk them, halfway through the walk, you see a pothole, and what do they do? What do you think they do?
Have a little drink.
Have a drink.
Have a little drink.
They love it.
Yeah.
They love it.
They love it. And
fantastic.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, all my points. They do slow traffic down. Have you got many potholes? Where do you live?
I live in Suffolk, Haverhill, Suffolk. So Yeah, we've got loads. We've got hundreds.
Well, your roads are rubbish, aren't they? I mean, they're just almost like they're unmade tracks, aren't they, really?
Well, basically, yeah. We're in the dark ages here.
But listen, how many moments of great cultural or artistic achievement took place on a perfectly tarmacked road? Can anybody think of anything that changed mankind as a result of people being on a beautifully smooth tarmac road? No. The road to Damascus. Do you think that looked like the M25?
No.
There was rocks here, rocks there, but what were there most of on the road to Damascus?
I don't know.
Potholes. As the man says in Zulu, thousands of them.
I like them. I do like them. They're really good for the dog.
When Moses parted the Red Sea, what do you think was the pathway that they went across back to the Promised Land like? What was it like? What do you think it looked like?
I don't know, Tom.
Did it look like you played billiards on it? No! That was just one huge pothole, wasn't it? The parting of the waves of the Red Sea.
Definitely. Can I ask you one question, Tommy? Whatever happened...
As long as it's vaguely on topic.
No, it's only... No, it's, but not, but whatever happened to Simon? That cool, that weird bloke Simon?
Do you mean the homeless guy?
Yeah, was it...
No, he's referring to a young man...
That was Steve, wasn't it?
Young man who used to call... Yes, but in the infancy of talk radio in its previous form, a young man used to call in. His name was Simon from Hampshire.
That's right.
And he caught everybody's attention because nobody could be quite certain whether he meant what he was saying.
He's mad, wasn't he?
Well, he had unusual views for a young man. He had old man's views, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
About homosexuality, about capital punishment, and yeah. I don't know whether he was real, and I don't know what happened to him either, mate.
Because I'll keep going to your podcast and stuff and trying to get them calls back, because it was so funny. He was so funny.
He was funny.
He was funny. You were funny as well. You just beat him up every time.
Well... well, only with kid gloves. Cozzy, thank you for your call and thank you for your support on this one. I'm very grateful. I enjoyed that. That was like a workout. You know, that was like doing a full circuit with somebody, you know, coming. Come on, give me one more good one, Tommy. I enjoyed that. I think I'll start tomorrow's show like that as well with a rant.
Right.
Is that all right by you?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Good. Good. And now, the other thing we're going to do tonight... Hello, listener. You're right. Let's see, it's 10:15. How's it going for you on a Friday night? You're probably envying people who are down the pub. Because that's what you used to do, isn't it? 10:15 on a Friday night, you were down the pub with the best of them, weren't you? Up to what, about your third or fourth pint? Or your third and fourth, what would it be? Port and lemon? Dubonnet lemonade? Well, you're better off where you are, frankly. Because the glass of wine that you might have in front of you, A, is cheaper, and B, you don't have to keep going up to the bar to get it. That's the annoying thing about pub drinking, isn't it? Somebody's got to keep going up to the bar and being out of the conversation for about 8 minutes. Now, what I thought I'd do this evening is as follows. One of many things this evening is as follows. I have to have a medical every year in connection with some other work that I do. And a couple of years ago, my doctor said, your blood pressure is a bit high. So she suggested some pills, which I don't take, I'm afraid. But also suggested I get myself a machine and monitor my blood pressure, which from time to time I do. But I've never monitored my blood pressure while I'm doing a little bit of minor live broadcasting. So what I'm doing right now is hooking myself up to my machine and turning it on. Honest, that is the sound of an electric blood pressure machine. And it takes about 10 or 15 seconds. If you've had your blood pressure taken, you'll know. That second pump up means that it's quite high. And I've been told to get it down from where it generally is, about 140 or 150 over 90. I'm supposed to be getting it down to 120 over 80, but I'm going to guess that after a rant on the radio, it's going to be higher than that. And the figure comes up, along with my pulse, in just a second. Now, if you've got a blood pressure machine at home, and some people listening will have, it might be an idea to take your blood pressure from time to time during the show and monitor whether this show is likely to end your life early or allow you to live longer. Now, my blood pressure at the moment is about as high as Neil Armstrong's was when he stepped on the bloody moon. It's 187 over 106. Make a note, Hayley. And that is suicidal. So I'm going to start calming down. Can we do your blood pressure as well, Hayley, just so that we can make a family thing of it? Would that be all right?
Love to.
OK, so she's stripping off because you need a bare arm to have your blood pressure taken. And whilst Hayley is doing that, I need to thank Hayley for a belated Christmas gift that she brought in this evening for me, which is a window mount for my mobile phone so that I don't have to use my prefabricated piece of polystyrene held together with blue tack to support my mobile phone on my dashboard, which is my sat nav, to get me through the centre of town and out towards where I live. So it's very sweet, and as the show unfolds, I will unbox and see whether it works. Are you ready to have your blood pressure done? What do you think it will be?
Oh, I don't think it's going to be as high as yours, but I do know it's going to be high because I've got high blood pressure too. So
well, strap yourself in. And when you're ready to go, press the white button at the bottom and we'll hear it happening whilst I have a word with David, who is our next caller. Good evening, David.
Hello, Gord. Right, so, you need a calm down mind.
I do,
you really do. You just need to take it in a deep breath.
Yeah.
Right, what's your opinion about the refugees coming across from France?
I think they're absolutely heroic, and it proves that they are British because they are so nautical.
Right, brilliant, right, thank you, first one. Right, so about...
Like Nelson, Walter Raleigh.
...in prison.
They are the new naval heroes of Britain.
They're wait a minute, you answered my question. Right, rehabilitation...
I didn't answer it as
telephones in prison.
...thoroughly as I wanted to. Say again?
No. Do you think it's right that sort of telephones in prison should be allowed?
Absolutely. Of course, yes.
Brilliant.
It makes life easier for prison officers, prison wardens, the staff of prisons.
Why are you so stressed out?
Because I've just done a rant about potholes.
I know, right, I'll tell you what, have you seen my pictures I've been sending you on potholes? Are we watching Newcastle Council workers, right? And what they do is they throw a lump of tarmac off the back of a van and hit it with a piece with the back of a shovel. And now, then that's how they solve the pothole crisis.
I know you're calling from Newcastle, David, but you're not a Geordie, are you?
No, I'm a Macam.
I can tell it, you see, I can tell it. Do you want to know why?
Good one.
Because my father's from Wild's End, man.
You what?
My father's from Wild's End. I'm half Geordie. And I can spot you guys, you imposters, you aliens,
right,
you refugees from Sunderland.
I
can spot you.
I live in...
You crossed the Tyne in an inflatable, man, didn't you? And they didn't pick you up and you think you can stay. Well, you can't. You got no skills and you're going back home, even if you're going to be persecuted.
Right, wait a minute. I was born in Pretoria Street in the Scotswood, within spitting distance of the Tyne. So, no, I haven't come up for a fight.
No, I thought you said you were a Macam.
That way, that's all.
I thought you said you were a Macam.
No, you were accusing us. I'm saying, I am a pure-bred Geordie. Okay?
I don't know about that.
I'm trying to get you to calm down because I'm worried about your health. Right, so, tarmac on the roads.
Yes.
Newcastle Council, driving along, they get a shovel, they throw a lump of tarmac off the road, and jump off the wagon, and then slap it down with the back end of the shovel.
Well, they shouldn't. They should leave it. It's a thing of beauty, and it's performing an important function, slowing the traffic down.
These are on speed ramps. This is why I've called in.
No, you don't get potholes in speed ramps. That's one thing you don't get.
I've sent you pictures.
Yeah, I'd like you to do that. I'd like you to send me... Yes! Get out there now You've got street lights where you are, last time I heard.
Man, I've already sent them. Mate Graham's got me pictures.
Yeah, but he's on the air in another radio station, albeit next studio to us. So please send me those pictures of a speed bump, which has also got a pothole in it. God, it must look like the Alps.
Repaired tarmac.
Do it.
From Newcastle City Council.
Yeah.
The proud of the world.
Thank you for your call. Whilst listening to that argument, Hayley's blood pressure, and by the way, your pulse, what do you think your pulse is at the moment? My machine is telling me what it is. What do you think it is, your pulse?
I'd say quite low. I feel quite chilled.
72?
Yeah, that's not bad, is it?
And your blood pressure is extremely healthy.
It's
but
quite
could
low,
be
isn't
a
it?
Little bit better. It's 142 over 82.
That's not bad compared to yours.
Oh, mine is. But mine's always been like that. My mum's blood pressure was occasionally in the 220s. I know.
That's really not healthy.
No, but it is from my point of view, because I can just say to the doctor, oh, well, it's genetic.
You still need to be taking the tablets.
Well, then I'd do the show like this. Hello. Welcome to the programme. I know that wouldn't differentiate me from anything you hear on Radio 4. People think, actually, we've got Radio 4 here now. Oh, I thought it was going to be the shipping forecast.
They're talking about potholes.
They're talking about potholes, but very slowly. So, no, I'm not going to do that. What I will do is take my blood pressure again in about 10 minutes when we've moved on from the rant. Just remind us of the ways in which you can contact this fine endeavour.
Call 0344 499 1000, text 87222 and tweet us on @TalkRadio.
And right after a few important messages, I'm going to be testing Hayley and anybody else who is listening who is Jewish to their knowledge and understanding of the joys of Yiddish.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Ahead of the joys of Yiddish, a couple of texts and what have you that have flooded in. Somebody called Gary Craig, who is a fervent cyclist, I would guess, but is not as good at listening as he is at riding around the roads on two wheels and ignoring the traffic lights, if that's what he does. Of course, he may not. Because he says, why hating on the cyclists? Such comments are so sad and just fuel further hatred. Shame, as I thought you were better than this. Gary, I'm on your side. I want cyclists off the road for their own sake. I don't want them to suffer the dangers, the fear, the panic, the paranoia, or indeed the ridicule that people dressed up in that lycra on a Sunday morning, especially in those middle-aged pelotons of 40 advertising executives or so going round and round the lanes and the roundabouts going, alley, 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 alley. I want to spare you that. Where I live, they've got these new fantastic pavements which are cyclist-friendly. Now, there's a little round blue sign in a white circle that shows an adult with a child and a bicycle. And it means you are allowed to walk on this pavement and you're allowed to cycle on this pavement. And it's the future. It is the future. Cyclists shouldn't cycle fast. The reason being that a cyclist cycling fast emits more greenhouse gases into the environment than a small family car travelling, petrol car, travelling the same distance. Now, not many people believe that statistic, but I know it's true because I worked it out myself. What's our number again?
0344 499 1000.
All hail to Tommy, you talk so much sense, welcome back. That's from somebody who signs themselves Pedoff. And what's nice, I'll tell you what's nice about texts and tweets that you don't get with phone calls, although I like phone calls too, in fact I probably prefer them, is that you can sometimes get a little picture of the person. So I can see that actually Gary Craig, who misunderstood my support for cyclists, is he's running along wearing a singlet and looking, he thinks, quite athletic and, you know, the sort of modern middle-aged man with a fairly flat tummy. Whereas Pedoff has got a small photograph of a car being followed by a police van. I have no idea what that's supposed to mean, but I like it. Talk Radio, hi Tom, I have a BP monitor. We are monitoring our blood pressure on this show just to see what effect it has on you when you get excited, when you relax, when you schmooze, you know. When you go into the news and come out of the news. For example, if the news is harrowing, what will it do to our blood pressure here on the show? Never mind about the listener.
It should go up, shouldn't it?
You'd think. Pat has said, I have a BP monitor in front of me. Mine reads 127 over 74. Which is swanky,
that's quite
isn't
low.
It? Yeah. Well done, Pat. You're in the lead. Let's give away a Mars bar to whichever listener has the lowest blood pressure by 1 o'clock this morning.
Let's do it.
What effect will it have on you to have... Well, are you prepared to find out what effect a Mars bar has on your blood pressure, Hayley?
I can Google it right now.
No, I mean, well, are you prepared to have your blood pressure taken, eat a Mars bar, and then see what it does to your blood pressure?
I've got plenty of chocolate next door.
That.
You know
that's
I always have chocolate with me.
I was trying to find a way of helping you get through your supply of chocolate and make it appear part of your work.
It's part of the job, isn't
it? What I'm doing here.
Yeah, yeah, you're helping me. Thank you.
I do this with everybody I work with. I try to make sure that everybody I work with is happy because my colleagues, believe it or not, are even more important than the listeners. Because you have a greater effect on your colleague. Doesn't matter what your job is, you have a greater effect on your colleagues, right, than your customers or your associates or, you know, in broadcasting, your listeners or your viewers. So it's important to me that Sam is happy, who's pressing all the buttons, not necessarily in the right order, as we said the other day, and that, Hayley, that you're happy.
In the interest of science, I will eat more chocolate.
In the interest of science. Now, Jamie has... texted, if you want to drive a car that's like a British Touring Championship speed machine with low-profile tyres, don't be surprised if you wreck your mean-looking alloy wheels going over potholes. Okay. And subject change. What film's that from?
Oh,
subject change, John. It's a terrible film in which Sylvester Stallone plays a man who has been frozen as a punishment for being violent. A violent cop, he was.
That's quite a good idea, actually. So they should do that, shouldn't they?
They froze him for 50 years. But then, 50 years in the future, there was a violent criminal and the police couldn't handle the violent criminal because none of them knew how to deal with violence. So they had to defrost Sylvester Stallone, OK? Because... He was the only person that they could find to handle... I think it was Denzel Washington, but I'm probably wrong. OK? And they had a funny way of speaking in those days, which was sometimes if the conversation was ended, they'd just go, subject change, like that. But you know the thing that struck me most about that film, and I've never had the answer? 50 years in the future, they don't use toilet paper.
Oh. Why?
He comes out of the toilet the first time he's been unfrozen, right? Obviously, he needed to go. Number one and number two. You would, wouldn't you?
Where is this going? Go on.
And he comes out and he goes, where's the toilet paper? And they go, we don't use toilet paper, John. There are three shells in there. And this is a running joke that they do throughout the film, but it's never revealed whether anybody who's put the show together has any idea what three shells might do that toilet paper can't.
My mind is going down roads that I don't really want to go down, if
exactly
I'm honest.
Exactly my thought. Our telephone number, again, is...
0344 499 1000.
Or you can tweet us. We're having to separate our calls out, our tweets out from tweets that we don't need, and we're happy to do that for you as a service. How do you tweet the show?
At Talk Radio.
At Talk Radio. The joys of Yiddish.
Oh, yeah, I'm excited about this.
Good listener.
Can I borrow this book after?
You can have it. It'll be my return gift for my window mount. Yesterday on the programme, Hayley revealed that she has some knowledge of Yiddish, a highly respected full language which is used mainly between Jewish mothers and their children.
I probably only know a little bit, though.
Well, I'm not, the testing of it
isn't
that
important. There's a lot of pressure here now.
I know there is. All right. OK, well... Now
we need to test the blood pressure.
Yes,
I can feel it going up as we speak.
If you don't get 6 out of 10, then you're a disgrace to your people.
My race.
Your people.
Yeah, my people. Can we call Ash? Ash would be good at this.
There was a funny moment. Have you ever seen that Larry, what's its name, program, the comedy programme?
Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yeah,
there's a moment when they've got people coming round and his wife says to him something about what she's serving. And he says, no, they won't like that. And she says, well, what do you people eat? You see? And Larry just goes, not comfortable with the people thing. And you know why?
Yeah.
Because embedded in Yiddish are a lot of the golden rules of comedy. The language and the way in which sentences are put together slightly ungrammatically. But I've got a book called The Joys of Yiddish by a Jewish writer called Leo Rosten. It's brilliant. It's my second copy because I lost my first one, and it's not a Bible, but it's a great read. It's intelligent and informative and very, very funny. But you used a phrase yesterday when you said that you sometimes go home and have a little sleep.
Schluff.
Sometimes go home and have a little schluff.
Is schluff in there?
No.
Oh.
Let me try a couple on you, all right? Do you have any idea what is a goy?
Oh, a non-Jewish person.
A non-Jewish person.
That's also Gentile, though, so I don't know the difference. Are they both in there?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Roston, the author, goes through the ways in which you can use goy and Gentile Jew in, you know, a way that could not possibly be construed as offensive, which is, you know, the spirit of everything that we're doing at this point on the show on this subject matter. And I hope that's shiningly obvious. Having explained what a goy is, which is a non-Jew, he then tells a couple of stories that illustrate it. And I'm going to do it without any voices or accents, OK? On Houston Street, a young priest saw a large sign over a hardware store, Pincus and O'Toole. The priest went in to be greeted by a man with a beard and a yarmulke.
Oh.
Yarmulke?
Yarmulke.
Yarmulke, thank you. The priest smiled. I just wanted to come in to tell you how wonderful it is to see that your people and mine have become such good friends, even partners. That is a surprise. I've got a bigger surprise, sighed the old man. I'm O'Toole. Okay. It's not hilarious, but...
And when was this book written?
Rich.
How old is it?
Oh, good 30, 40 years ago, because he died about 20 years ago, oh. Roston. But he wasn't just a joke writer or a comedy writer. Man wrote a number of serious, good
Did
books.
He do musicals as well?
Because I don't think he did any musicals,
wasn't
no.
Wasn't a lyricist or anything?
I don't think he was a lyricist, no. Let me try you on another Yiddish phrase and see if you can do it. Do you know what a knocker is?
Oh, I need to see the spelling of it.
It's a show-off.
Oh.
You know what is...
I don't think you've pronounced it right. I think this is half the problem, to be honest.
What might be a putz? You're a putz?
A putz.
You're a putz.
I think an idiot, maybe?
Yes, an idiot.
Yeah.
Or is it an idiot?
All right, although I'd call you a schmerl.
Is that polite or impolite?
Well, neither. It's just like, oh, you idiot. You know, it's not offensive.
Okay. What about an oirek?
Oirek.
Any idea? Yeah, no. You pronounced it right, but you don't know what it is.
No, I don't know what that one is.
That's interesting, isn't it? Who taught you Yiddish?
I just heard it in the house all the time.
But who used it?
Oh, my parents.
Both parents?
Yes.
Equally? See, according to Roston, it's got a very interesting origin, this language. And it dates back to the time when men and women weren't entirely equal. And men were encouraged to and allowed to learn Hebrew, which was the sort of prime language. But women weren't.
Mm.
And so they came up with their own language. And it's often called Mother's Hebrew.
Oh,
yeah.
I never knew that, but now I think of it. But normally it is because often the more angry you get, the more Yiddish that comes out. And I think I remember my mum being quite angry a lot of the time. So not for any particular reason, just because. So I think the more... And I think that's true of any culture, isn't it? You don't use your mother tongue when you get angry. You kind of go off into kind of random languages, don't you? You know, do you know what I mean? You kind of... When you get angry, you use expletives and words that you wouldn't ordinarily use.
I think the most powerful form of attachment between a mother, certainly, a parent generally, and a baby is when they begin to pick up the verbal nuances of the way in which the parents speak to each other and the child.
Mm.
And the parent is immediately imprinted with those vocal inflections, that particular vocabulary, that way of pronouncing those words. And it's one of the first powerful bonds that a baby forms with their parents, and particularly with their mother.
Yeah.
Because the mother will probably, especially, you know, in times gone by, less so nowadays because people do try to share the whole parenting thing right from the birth, but certainly in times gone by, more for the mother than for the father.
And is that because the baby hears stuff while they're in the womb, do you think?
Now, that's a really good point. I hadn't thought about that, and the answer is almost certainly yes. And I'll tell you why, because just after our first son was born, whenever he used to get the evening wobblies, as babies often do, around about 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, they get a little bit cantankerous in the pushchair or in the cot. And then Neighbours would come on. And as soon as the theme tune started up, you do it, I can't.
Neighbours, everybody need good neighbours.
He would calm down. Da, 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 da. Now, we couldn't work this out until we realised that during the last months of her pregnancy, my wife used to make a point of getting a cup of coffee and relaxing on the sofa with her bump and watching Neighbours. And she must have calmed right down from, you know, the whatever she was doing, the hoovering or whatever.
Oh, so stereotypical.
I know.
She must have been hoovering.
Well, she was at home, so she definitely wasn't...
Oh, my gosh!
She wasn't filling in the potholes.
Did you just say that?
Not necessary to deviate there, but if you want to, I will.
No, go on,
carry on. If she's at home and I'm at work on the radio, how the hell can I do the hoovering?
Do it when you get home.
Why shouldn't she do it if she can? Just because she's pregnant doesn't mean she's ill.
Oh, no, carry
on. Come at me.
Carry on.
So this one, what's a vitz?
A vitz? Any idea? I don't know what a vitz
is. It's a joke.
No. Oh.
But it's more than a joke. It's a pointed piece of humour.
Oh.
A witticism, a wisecrack. Here's a very good example of a vitz. When Groucho Marx, who wanted to join a certain beach club in Santa Monica, was told by a friend to forget it because the club was known to be anti-Semitic, Groucho Marx said... Well, my wife isn't Jewish, so will they let my son go into the water up to his knees? And it gets us onto the fact that actually, you know, Yiddish has played a big part in helping a lot of comedy writing be even funnier than it would have been because of the strange way in which sentences are constructed in Yiddish and then translated into English. And then for no apparent reason, they become funny?
Yeah, yeah.
Let me just give you a quick example of this. Where is it? 446.
How did you find out about this book? Did you pick it up
in a charity shop? I went to Israel to work in 1980. Oh. And I was besotted with this guy who was my guide because he was so incredible. He was a master at chess and he used to beat me in about 45 seconds every time and he loved it. He didn't hang around and he didn't even give me a chance. He would just go boom, boom, boom. And he was very loud and very argumentative and very headstrong. And one day we were waiting at a busy crossing and he was driving and I was in the passenger seat and he said, all right, left. And I said, you can go after the bus. And he went. And I said, go after the bus. He said, that's not a bus, it's a truck. But it was a bus. And I said to him, but that's a bus and that's a truck. And he just went, not here. He was great fun. And I learned a lot from him. And when I got home, I decided to find out a little bit about some of the things that he'd said, because he would often say things and I hadn't got a clue what he meant by them. And he was talking Yiddish to me. And I just found it so interesting and amusing. So I went to, back in those days, you used to have to go to, what was the giant bookshop that they used to have in London? And is it still there?
Foyles?
Foyles, yes. You had to go to Foyles for
still
any...
There.
It's still there?
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic. Have you been lately?
Not lately, no. The one down Charing Cross Road you're talking about.
Yes, yeah. The one where you'd buy a book and they would put it on an overhanging thing and fly it to the place where they had money.
Oh, I hadn't seen that.
Because I don't know if it still do.
No, I don't.
The idea was you couldn't, back in those days, trust any old employee with the 3 shillings and 6 pence that the book cost. It would have to go into this armoured booth and then the change would come back and be given to you along with the book that had been wrapped. So that's where I got this book from.
That's interesting.
Shortly, I'm turning my attention to the important act and notion of what are you going to do tomorrow?
Saturday.
And why? Hmm. Exactly. And there is much more to this than there appears. You're tuned to Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd. Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Talking about books this evening, is there a book, Hayley, that's changed you a little bit, or a book that you like to know that it's always going to be in the house because it's
the
just...
Secret Garden. Just because that was one of the first books I remember as I actually able to read myself when I got to, you know, an age where I didn't have to be read to.
Okay, what's that about?
The Secret Garden. It's about a little girl that grows up in this big mansion, and there's this secret garden, obviously, that she goes and she makes friends.
Okay,
but no one else knows about it. So I think that's quite, I don't know, it's quite magical.
So it's a coming-of-age book? They talk about a rite of passage, they talk about, don't they?
No, I think it's just more of the... It's
you were
the
growing
first,
up yourself at the time.
Yeah, it's the first book that I could read on my own in my bedroom without having to be, you know, read out loud.
Did you ever read after the time you were supposed to turn the lights out?
Oh, yes, yes.
Ah, excellent. What did you use to illuminate the book? Do you have a little torch? Batteries never used to last on those little torches that we used to have under the bedclothes. What about you, Sam? Is there a book that's dear to your heart? Desert Island book?
For me, it was Percy Jackson. Because when every other kid was reading Harry Potter and that sort of thing, Percy Jackson was what I was reading.
Okay, what's Percy Jackson? Forgive me.
So it's about a kid who's... he's a demigod. His dad is Poseidon. And so he has abilities to manipulate water and he goes to a camp full of other kids who are also demigods.
So it's a bit Harry Potter-ish.
Yes, it's a similar sort of thing.
Supernatural.
And,
yeah. A young person, they both happen to be boys but could be girls, who have got a bit more power than we actually feel we have when we're little, and that's quite exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah. And, like, you feel it because there's a lot of Greek mythology stuff in there as well, which I absolutely loved.
Well, I bought a book recently and now I've lost it, and it's about what to do tomorrow, because tomorrow is the first day of the rest of your life. And you have to remember that you're mortal. We're kind of talking, good listener, about books this evening. It wasn't really planned, but books are rather starting to crowd in here. We've got plenty of other things to talk to, and I'll get to those as the evening unfolds. But we've just been celebrating a book called The Joys of Yiddish. And now we're on to this book that I've lost. I don't know where it is.
That's a theme there, because you said you lost your first version of that book.
Yeah,
do you just lose stuff in
I lend
general?
Them to people and never get them back.
Okay. That's different than losing,
yeah,
I think.
True. So I don't know who I've lent this one to. But what I did do, and I don't often do this, was I did a little cut out and make that was in the middle of the book. And what you do is you cut out and you make a dice. All right? And I'm going to get Hayley to throw it. Oh. And we'll see what it says. Because this is going to give you, any one of these throws of the dice will give you a thought that you may wish to carry with you for most of tomorrow.
Oh, it's a bit like a fortune cookie.
It's a bit more than that.
Okay. I'm not playing it down. I think this is a fantastic idea, by the way.
Here we go. Don't read it. Just throw it.
Oh, okay. Just throw it. And then just where it lands,
What have you got?
Okay. Live this day as if you were living it for the second time.
Right.
So it's not. It's a rehearsal, then.
Well, what does that mean?
Well, I guess learn your lessons, doesn't it?
Don't waste the day.
Yeah, but if you... No, because then that would be seize the day and do whatever you want. Because it could be the last day that you're on Earth, where that is, do it as if you've done it before, do it the second time. So from that, I get, learn your lessons, do it better than you did before, don't make the same mistakes again, and
so
give it another go.
If you went through today, and you can do this, listener, actually, we all can. If you went through today, and today's only got another hour and a bit, if you went through today, how many things would you do differently? And you don't have to say what they would be, but are there many things that you would just do slightly differently or a lot differently? Because what this dice does, it reminds you that we're not here forever.
It's nice.
So are there?
I would have ate less chocolate, I think.
Oh, God.
Because I'm still eating it now at 10:49 at night.
Yeah, okay.
Do you want something a bit more deep?
I would have...
I didn't really do much with my day today, if I'm very honest with you.
It depends on how good you want to be. It depends on what you want your life to be and how perfect you want to be. The kind of things that you would do better and differently might tell you just what your hopes and dreams for yourself are.
I didn't have one of those days, though. You don't live your best life every day, do you?
No, but you have thoughts. Mm. We're always tackling our thoughts, and we probably want our thoughts to be as noble as possible. You see, I had an ignoble thought today.
Ignoble.
It's the opposite of noble. You do pronounce the G, I believe. But anyway. And what it was, I fancied a little bit of a doze this afternoon on the sofa because they were racing at Leicester and I quite fancied one in the 3:05. OK. But my other half had said that we were going to nip to the supermarket and get all the things that everybody else was getting, you know, bland food, because we'd had so much rich food and we were out of milk and that sort of thing. And she was going to take a couple of the youngsters with her, so it's going to be bedlam, because in a supermarket, no youngster ever sees something that they don't want. Oh, look, these are really tasty, you get all the time. Yeah. You know,
so and it's always at child height as well, isn't it? They do that on purpose.
So what I did was I just pretended that I was a little bit more tired than I really was. And it was ignoble of me. And I think my wife knew that I was going through the motions of kind of going, oh, OK, you know. And she went, listen, you stay here and relax on the sofa because, you know, you're going to be up late tonight. Now, if I was going to live my day today again, I wouldn't do that, because when she went off, I felt guilty and maybe even a little bit ashamed. You see, this is what this thing's all about.
I think you're thinking that far too deep.
No, I don't. Sam, do you want to throw? You've got 5 minutes before you have to press all the wrong buttons when it's news time. Sam's the person who works the other side of the glass screen. So although you listening hear Sam as though he were sat amongst us, he in fact lives in a different postcode, works in a different postcode. So have a throw of the dice and try and come up with a different one from Hayley's. What have you got?
No, I'll roll again. It was the same thing.
Oh, okay.
Live as if you had 6 months left.
Oh,
now that's a big one.
I like
isn't
that
it?
One.
Live as if you have 6 months left.
But would you do anything differently?
I'd probably get out of bed sooner.
You would, wouldn't you?
Well, because obviously working this time.
Yeah.
I wake up around sort of 9 o'clock, but because I'd not got anywhere to get up and go.
Yeah.
I don't think I tend to have a shower until about midday.
So if you thought you only had 6 months to live,
I'd
of course
actually.
Some people do, and our sympathies go out to those who are genuinely dealing with such an issue. But if you were to use such a thought, that would give you more momentum in your life.
Yeah. Well, if I had 6 months left, I'd quit this job and go places.
Do you know, I've not had anybody throw the dice and get. It's funny you should say that. I've not had anybody throw the dice and get. Live your life as if you have 6 months left, who didn't say the same thing. Yeah. I'd pack my job in.
Yeah.
I did it with my hairdresser the other day and she went, oh, I'd pack this in straight away. But we don't, do we? We don't, because actually we do spend most of our life kind of pretending that we're going to be here for not forever, but almost forever. Because we don't want to think about the fact that we're mortal, which I think this is what this is all about. Are you playing at home? How would you have a think? Go on. You've just thrown the dice at home and it's come out. Live the rest of your life as though you only had 6 months left.
Oh.
I'm just leaving it to let people have a little think. Anybody interested in what I'd do differently? I'd start ringing round everybody I'd ever known and saying, how are you doing? How did it turn out? I'd like to make sure that everybody, you know, has had a fairly good crack at the whip. Like to go through my contacts books, my contacts in my phone, and ring everybody up and just say, hey, I've got 6 months left. Shall we meet up for a few beers? And just, you know, put the whole thing to bed.
That's lovely.
See, I've actually found myself doing a similar sort of thing more and more lately. What I tend to do now, if I have, like, someone that I used to be friends with or someone that I know just suddenly crop up in my brain, every now and then I'll just send them a message. And just saying, hey, randomly was thinking about you and just wanted to catch up and see how things are.
See, some people actually need this dice less than others. And maybe you're one of those, Sam. Maybe you actually will live longer than 6 months anyway, you know, God willing.
Hope so.
You know,
yeah.
Or inshallah. Various religions have their own version of God willing. But that's quite wise and quite profound. What are you reading a book at the moment?
Yeah, I'm always reading.
What do you got on the go?
At the minute, I'm reading the fourth book in the Jumper series. Have you seen the film Jumper? About the guy who can teleport.
No.
But it's that... so he initially uses it because his dad's abusive, and so he runs away from home, uses it to rob a bank, so that he's suddenly really rich and can go and do whatever he wants.
Okay. Who writes that?
Stephen Gould, I think it is.
Okay. I'm getting to meet the author, Anthony Horowitz... Horowitz, I don't pronounce it, in January, which is going to be interesting because my youngest son has read about 8 of his books.
The Alex Cross or Alex Ryder?
Yeah, that's Alex Ryder.
Alex Ryder,
I think that's the one. Yeah. But I'm not sure I want to meet this person because I've read the book. I've read one of the books anyway, just to see what, you know, was going on with my son. And I've got the voice of the book. And so I don't want the bloke to change that by being, you know, I'm not saying he's going to be, but being, you know, not quite the voice that he is in the book, which is brilliant and incisive and witty and observant and all that sort of thing.
Well, it's also like when they release a film of a book that you've already read, it's...
Absolutely.
Always that worry.
You better go back and get ready to press all the wrong buttons because we're heading towards the news. And after the news, we are talking loosely about books on the evening show this evening on Talk Radio. We hadn't planned to do it. We're also talking about blood pressure. And in the 30 seconds just before we find out who's got an MBE and an OBE and Knight of the Garter and all that nonsense. Have you got any early news on that?
Yeah, it's just come out, actually. And they actually give out, the interesting part I saw, they give out 1,597 of the things. So they're not as special as you think, actually.
No.
Because I always assume there was only like 20 or 30 given out every time. That slightly disappointed me a bit, actually.
It's the famous ones you hear about.
Yeah, Monty Python star Michael Palin, he's been knighted. Twiggy, the famous model. She's been made a dame in the New Year's Honours list. And also England star Gareth Southgate, famous for his waistcoats.
Okay.
He's become an OBE.
When I was a Fulham fan, we had a forward called Steve Earle, E-A-R-L. And I campaigned for him to get an OBE so that he would then be known as Steve Earlobe. He didn't get one.
That's quite brilliant.
We're just checking my blood pressure, and obviously talk of mortality has broken the machine.
Oh.
No, look, it's cracked up.
You've broken the machine.
I've broken the machine. When we come flying back...
Is there a doctor in the house?
We're going to telephone Greenland. I'll tell you more after the news.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Evening, going to take a few calls from people who've called in. You can do the same if you want to, or you can just carry on listening. I won't be offended.
0344 499 1000.
Very nice. And later we're going to call, shortly we're going to call Greenland. Now your job, Hayley, is to say, Tommy, why do you want to call Greenland?
On your cue. Or do you want that now?
Yeah, I don't know.
Tommy, why would you want to call Greenland?
I was explaining to you earlier before we came on air.
I was trying to play along.
I know. This is the trouble with what's called a two-handed show or a first and second voice show or whatever you call it, or a boy-girl show. I hate that.
Oh.
I know.
It's back to your hoovering business again.
Yeah, I mean, don't push that too hard because I'm actually very gender neutral, very, very gender neutral, as you know, ludicrously gender neutral, so don't crack that whip too hard. But it's very hard. We have a chat about what we're going to hope to achieve in the programme before we come on air. And then we have to decide whether or not to act surprised or as though we knew what was coming. But we thought we'd call Greenland, or I thought we'd call Greenland, because doing a bit of research into something else the other day, I discovered that, and you'll now know what's the answer to this question, only one country has ever left the EU. And it is Greenland. And so I would like to find out from Greenlanders what it was like, why they decided to leave, did they have a referendum, what it was like in the countdown to Grexit or whatever they had, and what life is like now that they're not in the EU any longer. You know, do they have a... Did it solve their migrant problem if that was their thing? Did it feel good to get their sovereignty back if that was their thing? Did they have a problem with one of the volcanic islands off Greenland being partitioned and therefore there being an Atlantic Ocean border, you know? So what I did was I managed to Google up a few hotels, and I'll get Sam in a moment to call a hotel in Greenland and we'll take it from there to see how it goes. But let's have a word with our next caller who calls from Essex, and it's Andre. Hello, Andre.
Evening. Happy New Year.
And the same to you?
Yeah, I'm celebrating early. I know it's a little couple of days early, but I like to...
I can tell.
...think in advance, yeah?
I can tell.
And anyway, this is Greenland, where I'm living, safe as snow and all that, yeah? Because it's quite countryside where I live.
Do you know anything about the other Greenland at all?
Not particularly. Is it, say, the whale or something? It saved the snail round here.
I was going to say, I expect you know very little about Greenland, and indeed when I speak to a Greenlander, I'll ask them if they know anything about Essex.
Yeah, so if they know about Save the Snail and that, yeah?
Are you for or against snails in Essex?
Against, really, because they have it with my plants, my garden.
Since you mention whaling, it gives me an opportunity to pass on my view about sizism and animal protection.
What, sorry? Animal protection, yeah.
Sizism.
I believe in all that.
No, not in the relation to what you're thinking, Andre, dare I anticipate. No, what it is the bigger the animal, the more wonderful we think it is. And that's sizes.
True. Giraffes are a fine example.
Yeah, but they're not hunted, are they, for their horns?
No, they're not them horns, have they?
They have.
Just big ears.
No, giraffes do have horns.
Oh,
I swear
ears.
They do.
Yeah.
Could anybody... Hayley's just checking on that, just so that we're factually correct. Talk Radio has been on the air now for well over a couple of years and has yet to broadcast anything that is not factually correct.
Right, what sort of dictionary are you using? Collins or otherwise?
Google, mate, nobody uses dictionaries anymore.
Giraffe horns are not actually called horns, but ossicores, and are both female and male giraffes. Both female and male giraffes have them. Ossicords are formed from ossified cartilage and cover the skin.
Thank you very much for that one.
Giraffes
are
born with these ossicores.
Thank you.
However, they are flat and not attached to the skull to avoid injury at birth.
Oh, nice one. Nice fact there. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Is there anything about them? Is there anything about them?
I've got horns. I'm a devil.
Yeah, okay.
I was thinking something else. But
I bet you are. Well, no need for that on this show tonight, all right? Yeah.
Presumably, no culture has decided that... Shut up a minute.
The watershed.
No, I know, but try and come in when it's your turn rather than just keep going.
All right, then. Well, don't talk over me. Go on, then.
I'll talk over you if I want, pal.
Go on, then.
All I was going to say was, are giraffe horns known to be in any way valuable? If they're not made of ivory. I'm not asking you, Andre. Isn't that obvious?
Would you?
No.
Well, don't answer a question with a question, then.
Well, try and work out whether the question is being asked of you. Do you think for one moment that I'm the kind of person who would know whether you, Andre, in Essex, off the top of your slightly tiddled head, would know whether giraffe horns were of any use to mankind or not? The answer, Andre, I'll give you a clue, it's no.
You're asking me?
What do you reckon, Hayley?
Actually, they are rare. And there's some facts here about that they think.
Do they cure impotence?
Come on, Hayley, come on, you're the one in the know, I think.
Oh, I know everything. Try me, anything.
Go on, what have you got?
What's the market value? Let's have a look. $450
for a giraffe horn.
For a pair.
A pair of giraffe horns.
Yeah.
For who wants them?
I don't know. I didn't get that far.
But they do have value.
Yes.
And yet, as far as we know, giraffes are not being hunted for their horns. As far as we know.
As far as Google knows.
No. But they are big. And my point about sizism is that whales, everybody goes, isn't that awful that somebody's harpooning them again? But why don't people care about a cod? When somebody catches a cod, nobody goes, oh my God, that's awful. They've caught a cod. They go, oh, great. I get a choice now between haddock and cod down the chippy.
Yeah.
But isn't it just the same as if you hunt a cod and catch it in a net and gut it, usually when it's alive? It's not very nice. Sorry to have mentioned it, but it's what happens. What is the difference between that happening to a cod and something similar happening to a whale? OK, the answer is that one's huge and the other one, actually, cod are quite big, about as big as a man. But yes, they are. Did you not know that?
No.
How big do you think a cod was?
I don't think I've ever had that larger one when I've had fish and chips. They're normally like a foot long.
No, that's a piece of a cod.
Is it?
That's not an entire cod.
No, it's a cod. If you ask
you
for cod and chips.
In a fish and chip shop, the thing that you get is the size of the thing
that
swims around.
It's shaped as a fish.
Yes, but that's a piece of a cod. That's like a steak cut of a cod.
No, it's shaped as a fish. It's got a mouth one end and a fin the other end.
Cods are about 8 feet long.
No, they're not.
Well, I exaggerated that for the sake of making the whole notion that you get an entire cod when you go to the chippy even funnier than it is. But it's actually quite funny in its own right. All right, look up cod.
I'm doing that now. But
I can tell.
I'm doing it. We're getting, they look quite big, to be fair.
We're getting like an old married couple here, Hayley. bickering.
We're only 2 nights.
It's quite good bickering, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fun. 5.3 kilograms, the average weight of a cod is, apparently.
Oh, I thought it was more than that. But anyway, that's still pretty big, isn't
haddock
it?
Haddock is 9.2 kilograms.
So haddock are even bigger?
Yeah.
Oh, well, they're not as big as I thought they were going to be. But my point still is that we care about... Would we care about whales if they were 2 inches long?
Probably not.
You see?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Sizes them.
Why? Why do we care so much about whales and elephants? But not about moths?
Well, because they're bigger than us. So we're scared of anything bigger than us, aren't we?
I was part of a safari that was looking at wildlife in Africa, and everybody was going, oh, look, elephants. Oh, look, giraffe. And then a moth flew in, and this bloke stomped on it. And everybody went, Ray, well, thank you, well done. And I thought, well, hang on. If that moth was 18 feet big, we would pay to go and see it. And we'd be going, oh, look at that fantastic moth. And isn't it huge? But no, because it was 2 inches across, it got stood on.
We don't care.
Yes. Mm. That's since Andre brought up the business of...
ossicles.
No, he wondered whether Greenland was something to do with whales.
Yes.
And I think hunting is a large part of the industry and the culture that goes on in Greenland. But I'm going to get Sam now. Could you ring for me, Sam, one of the two hotels in Greenland that I was able to get numbers for... and put it through to the switchboard just as soon as it starts to ring, if it does.
Hotel Arctic is closed from the 22nd of December until the 4th of January. Mails will be answered between Christmas and New Year. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
That's weird for a hotel to be shut at a really festive time of year, isn't it?
Well, you don't know Greenland.
I obviously don't know.
No, you don't know Greenland.
Maybe we're doing this at the wrong time of year.
Well, it's beginning to emerge that could be the case. I was quite pleased, though, to discover that they have to put up recorded messages... even in countries where there's only 50,000 people.
It was quite a long way to say, we are not open.
Well, he said it in Dutch. No, Danish first.
Right.
Because they've only got about 50,000 people live in Greenland, of whom about 48,000 people are what are now called Inuit. Or other, native dwellers of the within the Arctic or Antarctic Circle. They're not called Eskimos anymore. Apparently that's rude to say, I'm told. But that's what the term used to be. But the majority of people who live in Greenland, the only country prior to the UK that's ever left the EU, this is why we're phoning Greenland this evening, in the hope that we'll speak to a human being and they can speak English. And it was interesting that the announcement from that hotel was done in Danish and then in English. Mm. Can we try the other one, Sam? The other hotel that I got a number for?
It's like your doorbell, isn't it?
Hotel Icefjord, vi er travlt. Prøv at vende senere. This is Hotel Icefjord. We are currently busy. Please try again later. Thank you.
Well, we will, mate, just to hear your signature tune.
That was great! Let's hear it again!
Okay, what we're doing is we're calling Greenland, and there is a very powerful journalistic imperative involved here. We're not just mucking about. We're calling Greenland because we are bank of researchers on the evening show have unearthed this diamond. The only country to have left the EU, although a couple of associate countries have sort of left by association, but the only country that has left the EU prior to the UK is Greenland. And so, in the spirit of British investigative journalism, right, we are ringing Greenland, and there's only about 8 of them left now. We've rung 2 to find out what it was like, why they have a referendum, why they decided to leave, what it was like in the period leading up to. Was there division in the country? Were there little skirmishes between Grexiteers and Remainers? Were there Remainers? Who were the Remainers? Who were the Grexiteers? You know, was there a clear dividing line, geographical or cultural? And what were the consequences of leaving the EU? Are they all pleased? How would they vote if they had a chance to vote again? So that's why we're ringing Greenland. There's one other number I gave you, Sam, and we've had such fun listening to the automated switchboards of hotels in Greenland. What do you think a hotel looks like in Greenland, Hayley? Because I've seen the pictures.
Oh, I imagine all the green. The greenery that grows on buildings. You know where it's
mould.
Flowers.
Flowers? Ivy.
Ivy, that's it. Ivy. Yeah, we got there. I imagine all that.
You imagine hotels in Greenland covered in
grand,
ivy?
Grand stature, quite royal almost.
Well, I've got a bit of a disappointment for you, because they're somewhere in between Pontins holiday camps and glamping on four in a bed.
Oh.
You wouldn't really call them hotels.
Oh, motels.
But they do have automated switchboards. Now what we're going to do is call the leading national newspaper of Greenland. Okay, have you got that number, Sam? Give that a ring. And when I say the leading national newspaper in New Zealand, I know from my research that they have over 3 journalists working for them. Is this them?
It's quite jazzy, isn't it?
Nice.
They're 3 hours behind, so...
That's about 30 years behind, I would say.
8:15? How do you pronounce this newspaper? Sir Mistake?
Yeah, it's...
Der måtte der studere rapport og dagelaget. Vi har travlt i øjeblikket. Vent venligst.
In English? Oh. Great.
Wait for the next bridge and then they might tell me.
Do it in English, yeah. This is the switchboard of Greenland's national newspaper. It just reminds me of that sketch in The Fast Show, you know? Have you watched The Fast Show?
I have done, but I don't know if I remember this
Jazz.
One.
Jazz. Great. Nice. Oh, are you a national newspaper? Oh, 7 years in journalism myself. Good half? That's no good. I've been practising my Danish all afternoon, I was. Lying in the bath, watching the racing from Leicester. I know how to say hello, and can you speak English in Danish? Good af. Der talen engelsk. And all we get is an answer phone machine that plays music. Okay, let that go, Sam. All right, so we're trying to contact Greenland to see if we can speak to a human being, because we found out that Greenland is the only country that so far left the European Union. And we were hoping to probe their experience. But it's turning into a bit of a sort of a light item, isn't it? As we're confronted by all these recorded messages and switchboards, could you just go back to the second one, Sam, that played that
doorbell music
and then said, "We're busy, could you call back later?" I can see through the glass screen that his furrowed brow suggests that there's a slight problem with this, but we'll give it one more go.
That's his concentrating look.
And then we'll give it half an hour. What time is it in Greenland? Does anybody know? 1957, yeah, joke. Yeah.
Sounds like one of those, ooh.
Hotel Icefjord, vi travlt. Prøv at vende senere. This is Hotel Icefjord. We are currently busy. Please try again later. Thank you.
A little bit more of the music. Oh, no, it doesn't matter. Mm. Well, it doesn't. They don't sound very busy, do they? So they're obviously a very laid-back country. I could use a fortnight in Greenland if it's like that. Also laid-back and kind of otherworldly.
Yeah.
Couldn't you?
Yeah, I could.
Shall we research and just see if there's anybody... Who else might we be able to speak to in Greenland at this late hour time? Middle of the evening their time. I thought a hotel would be bound to be open, but the first one we called, they were closed for the winter. The second one that played the sort of fairground music...
What about an emergency plumber?
Do you really think they have an emergency plumber service in Greenland?
Why would they not?
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I will bet you the... Christmas present that you bought me, which
I
was a window mount for my... No, I just was going to have a bet with you, because I don't believe you'll get an emergency plumber in Greenland. You're going to try for it?
Well, that was the first thing that I thought of 24 hours.
All right. How many commercials are there coming up, Sam? About 2 minutes worth. OK, so you've got 2 minutes, Hayley, in which to see if you can track down an emergency plumber in Greenland, and your time's... No, don't start. I was going to... I saw your little fingers. Your time starts now.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
OK, Hayley has had 2 minutes to try and find an emergency plumber in Greenland who we might be able to talk to about Greenland's experience of leaving the EU, which they did a few years back and today are the only country to have done it before we do on March the 29th. Hayley.
I've moved on from emergency plumbers. It's too difficult.
You can find one. I've got a job for Sam, actually. So, Sam, if you could find... What was your suggestion?
I'm trying to find a radio station.
See if you can find a radio station in Greenland. That's a good idea. See if you can find a radio station in Greenland that we could talk to. Do you suppose there's a chance in hell that there is a radio station currently broadcasting in Greenland?
Well, after a very basic original look, there seems to be two.
Oh, go for it.
Two? OK. What does it say about them?
I've not got much so far, because obviously I don't really read the language.
Okay.
I know that one's called Ice FM.
That sounds like it comes from Guildford and broadcasts as far as Hazelmere.
Well, I'll give the full title is Ice FM Nuke Nuke.
Yeah, I should explain that that's nothing to do with intercontinental ballistic missiles. The capital of Greenland, I believe, is Nuke, N-W-K.
I've found one called KNR Radio. I've just put the number on the screen, Sam.
OK, what does that say about it? Has it got a Listen Now button?
Oh, gosh.
I'll find out what Listen Now is in Danish.
KNR, which is Kalatic... Oh, I'm not even going to try.
OK, so English to... Danish, right, search, Listen Now. When you go to the website of a radio station anywhere in the world, the website will have a button, usually across the top banner, Talk Radio does, that says Listen Now, and you click on it and you go straight through to output. So is there a button, Hayley, that says... Lyt nu is Danish for listen now. Lytnu. Is there a button on the Greenland radio station that says lyt nu?
Not yet.
Not yet. Sam, you having any luck? All right, well, whilst you two beaver away on that...
We should have probably done a bit more preparation on this.
We couldn't have done less. since we're doing a kind of a book show this evening, along with... investigating Brexit and discussing matters such as the contribution that the Jewish language of Yiddish has made to comedy writing, we're generally looking at books and books that have gave us things to think about. And one of the books that I've got in my collection, which gives me a lot to think about whenever I find myself dipping into it, is a book called Hagakure, which translates from the Japanese to English as Fallen Leaves. And it's a book that was written 300 years ago by one of Japan's then greatest samurai, about the code of the samurai and the things that they think are important. And I think we've all heard of samurai warriors with their samurai swords, and most people will be aware of the Tom Cruise film, which was called The Last Samurai, which was a sort of fictionalised version of some incidents that happened in the mid-1800s in Japan. But the wisdom of a man who, by the way, whose name is Yamamoto Tsunetomo, who cut off the head of at least one of his best friends when the best friend asked him to do it, which is what seppuku is all about, committing harakiri, he had this to say about life, along with plenty of other things. Human life is truly a short affair. It is better to live doing the things that you like. It is foolish to live within this dream of a world, seeing unpleasantness and doing only things that you do not like. But it is important never to tell this to young people, as it is something that would be harmful if incorrectly understood. And good listener, if you are no longer in your youth, I put it to you that you kind of get what they mean when they say that. Mm. And Haley, I'm sorry, you're trying hard to concentrate on what's being said, but you're also trying to raise somebody in Greenland. So stop pretending you listened to what I said just then, because I can tell from your face that you are totally enslaved by your laptop. Got anything?
No, not yet.
No. Sam, got anything?
I think we should try something else. What about a restaurant? How about a restaurant? Well, like a late night bar.
Yeah, go ahead, get a restaurant in Greenland if you can. This from Hedy, who has tweeted, Re-Radio Greenland. Tommy, I was mystified as to why the Vikings called Greenland Greenland. Perhaps the telephone call there can illuminate the enigma. Maybe there was intense climate warming around 1000 AD, or the Vikings were fibbing to make Viking settlers want to go there. Okay. Well, Vikings did actually contribute a great many words to the language which we now know as English. And the most intriguing of those is the word for the ubiquitous coffee outlet, Starbuck, did you know, is a Viking word. And it's not actually Starbuck in Viking, it's Starbeck. And a Starbeck is a village with a stream running through it. And when the Vikings invaded Yorkshire, and by the way, they left a lot of Yorkshire blood, a lot of Viking blood in Yorkshire, and probably people listening in Yorkshire will go, I always thought I had a bit of the old Viking in me. And they named a village in Yorkshire Starbeck because it had a stream running through it. And then in around about the 1600s, all the people who lived in this village, Starbeck, decided to up sticks and go to America and seek their fortune. But as it was often the case with people all those years ago, they didn't have a surname, did you know? In about 1600, many British people weren't allowed surnames. They were just called Arthur or whatever. But they needed a surname to get into America, so they took the name of the village, which was Starbeck. But they changed it slightly and called it Starbuck. So the Starbuck family went to America and got to Nova Scotia. And one of the strapping sons became a whaler. And he was a harpoonist. And he was a good harpoonist. And then when What's-His-Name was writing his book Moby Dick, the author researched... Who wrote Moby Dick? We're back to books again, you see. Who wrote Moby Dick? Come on. Melville. Harold Melville. Not Harold Melville in the Blue Notes. Herman Melville. Wrote Moby Dick. He was looking for names, and he did his research, and he came across this legendary harpoonist called Starbuck. So he called one of the crew on the Pequod, which was the ship that Ahab was using to try and track down the great white whale. He called him Starbuck. And the guy who invented the Starbuck cafeteria chain was a fan of Moby Dick. And when his venture capitalist business partner said, hey, I like this idea, a coffee shop where they have sofas and they sell coffee, and yeah, it's great. Okay, what are you going to call it? He said, I'd like to call it Pequod, after the ship in Moby Dick. And the venture capitalist said, quite rightly, I don't think you should call a coffee outlet anything with the word P in it. So come up with something else. So he said, well, what about the harpoonist in Moby Dick? And the venture capitalist said, well, what's his name? And the bloke said, Starbuck. And the venture capitalist said, like it. And the rest, as they say, is coffee. Have you had any luck finding...
Yes, we have. I found one.
OK, what should we do? Let's do this ahead of listening to some more crucial messages from sponsors, advertisers and so forth. What have you found, Hayley?
So I found restaurant Mama Root. Mama Toot?
OK, so we're going to call live restaurant Mama Toot in Greenland to see whether we can find anybody who can tell us about Greenland's experience of leaving the EU.
Det er restaurant Mamadut. Vi holder åben torsdag, fredag og lørdag. Kun mod forårbestillinger. Det kan ske på 27 27 10 eller på e-mail mamadut@mamadut.dk. This is restaurant Mamadut. We have open Thursday, Friday and Saturday. Only in advance booking. You can do it on 27 27 10. Or on email, mamadut@mamadut.dk. Hi.
Oh, it's going to leave a message. I was going to get him to ring back.
Oh.
I don't want to hear that again, so I'm not going to do that. But next time we've got an answer phone and there's a possibility that it's leave a message, I'm going to leave a message in English, but with a Danish accent.
They seem to only have about 10 restaurants in the whole of the island.
It's not a big country. Well, it is a big country. I think there's more people, there's less people per square mile in Greenland than almost anywhere on Earth. But they left the EU. And I couldn't find out whether they had a referendum, whether there was a squabble between the Brexiteers, whether the Leavers ever got on with the Brexit, with the Remainers. We should learn from experience. There's no point other people going where we will boldly follow without learning from what happened to them. So part of this evening on this late night phone-in on Talk Radio, I, Tommy, Hayley and Sam are investigating the Greenland experience. And we're doing it live. As you can tell, because so far we've only managed to get answer phone machines.
At least it's authentic.
It is. It's entirely authentic.
So I've got two more options here for us.
Just quickly, Jamie has messaged the book that changed my life. We're talking just generally about books as well on the programme. So it's a nice mixture of Brexit done differently and books, which are fantastic. Jamie says the book that changed my life, in fact saved my life, is the volume affectionately known as the Big Book by Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't have to buy it. Every library has one or two copies. And that's signed Joe. Thanks for that, Joe. Tommy, do you know that you were... This is Mr. Linton, and I don't get this tweet, but I'll read it out anyway. Tommy, do you know that you were once a record holder? Yes, you once held a record for being the youngest person alive. And Jack has... I don't get that.
I don't understand.
But I suppose at the moment of my birth, I was...
Yes.
Is that what is being alluded to here? That at the moment of your birth, you were the youngest person alive?
Maybe. And has that got something linked to your dice that we were throwing about?
Well, we'll come back to that a bit later on. Sam's had a wave.
I think that's a disappointed look.
You're having no luck, Sam.
Oh, no, no, no. Read the screen.
Read the screen.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Kuquat Nun Greenland.
Which I believe is an Indian restaurant.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
Hello, the man's telephone is here.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, hi.
Taladu Ingletsk.
In math?
English.
English, yeah, yeah, I can.
Oh, hello. I'm calling you from the United Kingdom in England.
Okay.
We're
going to England.
Yes, we are a radio station, and I wondered if I could speak to somebody for a moment about what happened to Greenland when you left the European Union.
No, okay, that maybe you can have my husband.
Yes, I'd love to do that.
The number you found, yeah, just a moment.
Is your husband available?
I need a microphone. That's fine, I speak to Mess.
Hello, do you speak English?
Yes, I do.
Hello, my name is Tom, and I'm calling you from a national radio station in the United Kingdom.
United Kingdom, okay.
Yes, we wanted to speak to somebody in Greenland about what it was like for Greenland when you left the European Union. Your country left the European Union?
Yeah, but we didn't leave it like that. You know, we had the back door into the European Union. Denmark is still a member of the European Union.
Sorry, I missed that. Are you saying that Greenland is still a member of the European Union?
No, we're not. But we are a member of the Danish Kingdom, and the Denmark is a member.
Yes.
So we had a kind of a backdoor, you know, to that kind of things.
Yes.
To sell our fish and to have a good relation and to have some good association with the European Union.
Okay, that's very interesting. Our listeners, you're on the radio live, I should say. What's your name?
My name is Mess.
Mess?
Yeah, Mess Beck.
Okay. And your English is very good. Thank you for that.
Oh, welcome. You're welcome. It's but the story is that Greenland is a very small population and it's a very small country. We just have a lot of fish, and it cannot be compared to United Kingdom's Brexit.
But were there disagreements, strong disagreements, between people in Greenland who wanted to leave the European Union and people who wanted to stay?
Yeah, there was, but the story was that when Denmark was voting to get into the European Union, then Greenland were already a majority of the people in Greenland was already voting no for the membership.
Ah.
So it was only a question of time when we have a home rule government that they put that on the agenda. And then we vote ourselves out in 82, I think it was 81 or 82, start of the 80s, anyway.
And?
So.
And what was the vote in Greenland, if you know the percentage terms of the vote in Greenland for or against remaining in the EU?
It was something like 70-30 for leaving.
Okay, and what?
Because we had a government by that time also that didn't like that we were a member of the union. The story was a lot more that it was a lot more on the heart. You know, it's about we didn't want them to come and steal our fish. In this terms, that we had the only thing that we had by that time was fish, and then the European Union would be taking all the quotas and taking all the fish and giving it to also to us, of course. But they would have the deciding word to say about it, and that was the main thing about it.
This is very, very interesting and very useful for our listeners, I have to say, Mess. Are we interrupting your work? Are we keeping you from serving your customers or anything?
No, I have people working, so it's no big deal about that.
Well, could we talk to you for just a little bit longer? Only we're a commercial radio station, so we do a very short commercial break now, and I wonder whether you could just hang on after the commercials, just give us a little bit more information about Greenland's experience. Is that possible?
Oh, yeah, but you cannot tape it or what?
No, we're live, I did say.
Oh, you're right. Okay.
We're listening to you now.
I'll see what I can do.
It's
let's see if...
only for 2 minutes. I do appreciate your time. Thank you.
Okay.
back to Greenland after these words.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd. Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
We're relaxing a little bit now, as you should do at this sort of time of day. There's only about a quarter of an hour of the day left. We've been talking about what tomorrow is going to be to each of us because of inspiration from a book. And we're talking about books. We've done some bits and pieces about books and favourite books. And coincidentally, messages Elfed, the first book I bought in Welsh, were translations of Anthony Horowitz. And he says, or she says...
It's a she.
It's a she. Your surname is Welsh for food, by the way. That's useful to know. The other strand in the show is we are trying to contact Greenland to find out... Matt Thomas has sent a text to Hayley. You read it.
Oh, OK.
She's handed me the mobile phone. You read the text from...
So he says he's listening in tonight because there's nothing much else to do, but he is enjoying it. He says he's lived near Stabekk, went to university in Yorick, and where he lives now has lots of Viking hints in place names, Kirk, Thwaite, Thorpe, By and so on. Viking heritage all around us, because we were still talking about Stabekk.
Yes. Yes, would you... You see, I wouldn't have minded being a Viking. I'd rather have been a pirate. I think in the beating heart of many men... There is an urge either to be a Viking or a pirate. What about women?
I either want to be a princess or a queen.
Yes, there you are, you see. And people say that, you know, we're all people. But there is such a thing as women who are different from men, which is what is kind of complicated in this day and age. Now, I think I would like to have been a pirate. I had this conversation very late one night in a hotel room with a cricketer called Ian Botham. And we were watching The Dogs of War and emptying the minibar. As he does. And halfway through Dogs of War, which is a film from a book by Frederick Forsyth, I believe, about mercenaries, I said to him, would you have liked to have been a mercenary, Ian? And both of them sat up on this bed. He's such a huge man. He sits on a cross-legged on a double bed like it's anyone else would, a stool. He's so huge. And he just went, no, boy, no, he said. I would like to have been a Viking. And by God, he'd have made a good Viking, too. We're phoning Greenland because only Greenland has the experience of what it is actually like to leave the EU having been a member. And we tried a couple of hotels in Greenland and just got curious answer phone messages. Then we tried Greenland's national newspaper, which is closed, and also had an answer phone message. Then we tried an Indian restaurant in Greenland. And they were also closed, except and if you'd booked. And then who found the restaurant that we eventually got through to you guys? Was it Hayley or Sam?
Me, I Googled it.
It was Hayley.
Yeah, yeah, but it was with Google. Kwokok Naan, it was called.
Do we know what sort of food they serve? We had a chat with the boss man called Mess, and Mess said that there was quite a lot of ill feeling between the Remainers and the Leavers in Greenland, even though they reckoned that they were going to leave at the earliest opportunity because when Denmark and Greenland had a strong association, I'm not sure exactly what with Denmark, at the time that Denmark joined the EU, the Greenlanders were already 70-30% against membership. So it was always going to happen, except there was a rift. Mex has gone back to serving the tables or cooking the... What food do they serve in this?
So it's a fish restaurant because they're fish right by the coast.
Didn't he mention fish a lot?
Yeah, yeah. But they're a really good restaurant. They got 4.7 stars on Google out of 5.
From whom?
The public. You know, you can leave reviews on Google after you visited somewhere.
Not like Egon Rone.
Who?
Doesn't matter.
Do you know Sam? No. Okay, not just me then. But yeah, basically it's a really high-class
restaurant.
Egon Rone
is the god of restaurant star-giving out things.
See, on MasterChef or something.
Look, you know Michael Palin's just got a knighthood?
Yes.
Michael Palin was almost as funny as Basil Fawlty, John Cleese, in Monty Python.
Yes.
John Cleese, when the hotel inspectors were coming around, discovered that there was a rat in the hotel. No, dead dog. That was it. And it was the kipper and the corpse. And he said, dead dog in the kitchen, Egon Rone had knock off a star for that.
Okay, which is, if you know Fawlty Towers, that's quite funny. So 4.5
stars. 4.7 stars 4. Out of 5. Stars. It's a really high-class restaurant.
Comments from people who've been to the restaurant in Greenland?
Yeah, really good stuff here. Fantastic place. The sailing trip to the restaurant is amazing. On the way, we stopped and caught our own fish. Brought them to the restaurant and the chef prepared them for us. That sounds really cool. I want to go. Can we take a road trip?
It is starting to look attractive, isn't it? I have to say, we'd have to find a hotel that wasn't halfway between a Pontins holiday camp and one of the glamping sites that you see in Four in a Bed.
And more importantly, open, as we discovered two of them were closed.
But would you stay in a tent in Greenland? What's the climate in Greenland? We should have asked Mess what the temperature is in Greenland tonight and what they're serving in the restaurant.
Oh, see, we missed out on that, didn't we?
We went down to the beach. This is about 2 years ago, myself and my wife, one Sunday lunchtime, and some men had been out fishing, and they caught some sea bass, and we thought, got to do it. So we brought the two sea bass home, and I put them on the draining board, and one of them was still breathing. And I had this urge to take it back to the sea. Wouldn't you have done? It was lying on the draining board going...
Did you scream?
No, I just... My wife said to me, that one's still alive.
Oh, my gosh.
And I said, no, that's just a reflex. But I was lying, because it was still alive. Now, I couldn't put it in a sink full of chlorinated water, because they're sea fish.
Oh, gosh.
But all these thoughts went through my head. Shall I take it back to the sea, because it's alive, and therefore I ought not really have it? A live fish.
What did you do? I'd love to know.
Well...
Or do we not say?
I waited until it stopped sort of flapping and its gills opening and closing. And I felt awful. I was talking to it.
You talked it.
Come on! Don't leave us! Stay with us! No, I wasn't talking like that. I was kind of going, it'll be all right. You know, you get to see Grandad again. That sort of thing.
By the way, it's -5 in Greenland, just to...
-5 what, though?
Celsius. It's cold.
You see, although I am a Remainer, I would like us to go back to Fahrenheit. Because it's just more powerful, more potent. I mean, who says, hold the front page at the Sun newspaper when it gets to 31 degrees centigrade? But when it gets to 100 Fahrenheit... It's headlines all round. Phew, what a scorcher. Because you've hit the 100. So who was this centigrade guy? Or was his name Celsius? And he came up with an anodyne drink of water for a temperature scale. What was wrong with Fahrenheit? You know, you go -5 Fahrenheit and you are talking about that little drop on your nose freezing. So -5 Fahrenheit is more exciting than -5 centigrade. Did you know you can drink the dewdrop that forms when it's cold? Do you know what it is?
No.
Pure water. Yeah. Absolutely pure water. It's condensed water. What happens is you breathe in hot air into your nose, cold air into your nose, and it's warmed up by the capillaries in your nose. Mm. That's so that, you know, you don't freeze your passages inhaling cold air. That's why you have a nose. Did you know that?
No.
You have a nose, so it regulates the temperature of the air you introduce into your lungs. But what happens is when the cold air goes into your nose, it condenses, like you get condensation on a window, right? And you get that little drop, and that is pure water, distilled water. You could pour it in your car battery. Do people still do that? Sam, you would know about these things. Do people still pour distilled water into their car batteries?
No idea.
Do you know Hayley?
No.
You do, don't you, listener? You two can clear off now for about 5 minutes. I'm just going to talk to the listener. Because I know you, listener, and I know that you know about distilled water going into batteries, car batteries. You do, don't you? And you can remember windy-up car windows for the driver and the passenger. And you can remember being suspicious of electric windows because it was just going to be something else that was going to go wrong. And you said, didn't you... to that bloke in the pub next to you that you thought the most ridiculous thing you'd ever seen were windscreen wipers on headlights that they got on the new Volvo. I'm touching a chord here with you, aren't I? You see, these kids. They don't know anything about it. They've never heard of distilled water. They wouldn't know where you used to be able to buy it in a roadside garage. What the packaging would look like, it would be a clear glass bottle with a stopper. And it was water that was formed by boiling water and then letting the steam cool.
Is that the same as distilled?
I've given you the night off.
Oh, what? Stop looking at me.
Sorry, no, go on, carry on.
Is it like distilled whiskey?
Not as effective. But cheaper.
Oh.
Yes. And do you know the other disturbing thing about this that falls, that overlaps with the conversation that we're having? Hello, listener. Yeah, I know you're with me on this one. When I was given my first tape recorder, and look what was the end result of that, in the instruction manual it said that from time to time you should clean the heads. Do you know what the heads are of a tape recorder, you kids? No
idea.
Is
it the things that turn around?
No, that's the reels, the spools.
Yes.
The heads. When the tape passes the heads, which are small magnetic devices, okay, the information that's imprinted on the tape in a tape recorder back then, okay, would be decodified by the magnetic head, right, and turned back into sounds, whether it's music or speech, okay? But the heads used to get dirty. So this instruction, when I was 14, the instruction read, it is advisable, that you should from time to time clean the heads using gin. And I remember on Boxing Day reading the instructions of my new little tape recorder thinking, excellent. Now, how can I present this to my parents as if it is a technical requirement for the upkeep of their $17.99 Sony tape recorder that I've got for Christmas, whereas in fact it's going to be my first opportunity to go upstairs and get slightly drunk in my bedroom? You would have done, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think I would have done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see, listen to the kids.
Kids.
They will have different things to nostalgify about in about 20 or 30 years' time. I wonder what they'll be. What do you think you'll be nostalgifying about?
iPods. They don't make iPods anymore, I don't think. Because you just use your phone.
But you'll feel nostalgic about them, won't you?
Yeah, because I remember the first little ones. You remember the Nano ones? They were tiny little things. Didn't have a screen even. Just had like one button, like a play button and a stop button. That was it. Tiny little things. Like a matchbox size.
Sam, what might you nostalgify about?
Probably like old games consoles.
Yes.
A Mega Drive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And something will just trigger it and you'll be off. You'll be back there, won't you?
Yeah. Have to get it out of the loft and...
Yeah. You're tuned to Talk Radio. It's the evening show. I'm Tommy. Hayley is here and Sam is pressing all of the right buttons this evening. So let's see whether he can keep that up as we rattle towards the news. And after the news, we're going to be playing a little game which you can have a go at home. And it's based on a book by Douglas Adams, who wrote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And it's called Not the Meaning of Life, but the Meaning of Lif. That's next.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
OK, so he's got a knighthood, and I suppose Michael Palin is going to be the person who's got a knighthood that we're most going to be focusing on tomorrow, which is now, by the way. And they always have... four or five celebrities and a sports person, so that the notion of the honours thing becomes more a focus on the celebrities and therefore by default supports the whole notion of an honours system and what have you. So I think it'll be Michael Palin, or do you think Twiggy? Who's going to be the...
I find Twiggy quite interesting, actually, because I think she's done a lot of charity work, so I'd be interested to find out what she's done and, yeah, why she's on the list.
OK. And Gareth Southgate... got to the semi-final of a World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, he did us proud, didn't he?
Absolutely, no question about that. But why did Michael Palin get a knighthood? I don't know what charity work he's done. I know he's a fantastic bloke. He's one of the nicest... I've met him twice, and only briefly, and he's one of the nicest people I've ever met. And here's the ridiculous thing. He's a great performer on his round-the-world geographical TV programmes... very insightful and very intelligent and yet at the same time very sort of warm, and he doesn't flood you with his enormous intellect because he's an extremely bright person, but he doesn't come across as bright. But here's the thing, he's possibly the best television clown we've had in the history of television. And this is, for many people... Sam, can you just put up my laptop here? Because I'm just going to play a little touch of Monty Python and the argument sketch.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to have an argument, please.
Certainly, sir. Have you been here before?
No, this is my first time.
I see. Do you want to have the full argument, or were you thinking of taking a course?
Well, what would be the cost?
Well, yes, it's £1 for a 5-minute argument, but only £8 for a course of 10.
Well, I think it's probably best if I start with the one and see how it goes from there, OK?
Fine. I'll see who's free at the moment. Mr. Dubake is free, but he's a little bit conciliatory. Mm. Yes, sir. Try Mr. Barnard, room 12.
Thank you.
What do you want?
Okay, this is another person, not... the person who is prepared to have an argument with Michael Palin. It's Graham Chapman, the late Graham Chapman.
Well, I was told outside...
Don't give me that, you snotty-faced heap of parrot droppings!
What?
Shut your festering gob, you tit! Your type makes me puke! You vacuous, toffee-nosed, malodorous pervert!
What? I came in here for an argument!
Oh, I'm sorry, this is abuse.
Oh. Oh, I see. That explains it.
Yeah. Oh, no, you want 12A next door.
I see. Yeah. Sorry.
Not at all. No, that's all right. Stupid git.
So Michael Palin leaves that office and goes into the next office looking for the argument that he's paid for.
Hi.
John Cleese.
Is this the right one for an argument?
I've told you once.
No, you haven't.
Yes, I have.
When? Just now. No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
Didn't.
I'm telling you, I did.
You did not.
Oh, I'm sorry, is this a 5-minute argument or the full half hour?
Oh, just the 5-minute one.
Fine. Thank you. Anyway, I did.
You most certainly did not.
Now, let's get one thing quite clear. I most definitely told you.
You did not.
Yes, I did.
You did not.
Yes, I did.
Didn't.
Yes, I did.
Didn't.
Yes, I did.
No, this isn't an argument.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't. It's just contradiction.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
It is not.
It is. You just contradicted me.
No, I didn't.
Oh, you did.
No.
You did just
no,
then.
No, nonsense.
Oh, look, this is futile.
No, it isn't.
I came here for a good argument.
No, you didn't. You came here for an argument.
Well, an argument's not the same as contradiction.
Can be.
No, it can't. An argument's a connected series of statements to establish a definite proposition.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is. It isn't just contradiction.
Look, if I argue with you, I must take up a contrary position.
But it isn't just saying, no, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
OK, now, you might not like Monty Python. And if you're my generation, you actually probably... you might well have hated it. I liked Monty Python because my dad found it appalling and ridiculous. And it was something that I used to beat his generation with, the fact that Monty Python was right up my alley, because it was anarchic. And at the same time, it was actually sublimely intelligent. I'm just going to play one little more... tribute to Michael Palin. And good listener, if you were to pick the one little sketch with Michael Palin that probably best illustrates how funny he could be with so sometimes very little to work with, which one would you pick? And you're absolutely right, it's this one. Not the ad that you're about to hear, which I'll have to switch off. Wait a minute, I've got to skip through it a little bit.
I didn't expect... Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition!
Yes!
Amongst our weaponry are such diverse elements as fear, surprise, ruthless efficiency, and almost fanatical devotion to the Pope and nice red uniform. Oh, damn! I can't say it. You'll have to say it.
What?
You'll have to say the bit about our chief weapons are...
I couldn't do that.
Ready? Go out and come back in again.
I didn't expect a kind of Spanish Inquisition. Nobody expects. Nobody expects the Spanish...
Inquisition?
I know. Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. In fact, those who do expect...
Our chief weapons are...
Surprise.
Stop there.
Michael Palin.
A cheap weapon is a prize. Blah, 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 blah. Cardinal, read the charges.
I sort of missed the best bit of that, so I apologise. But that is Sir Michael Palin, the new Knight of the Garter?
Yes.
Is that what a knight is? A sir? And is the knight a knight of the Garter? I believe so.
Yeah. I like his Great British Railway Journeys.
Yes, we see each to his own.
You know, he has the Bradshaw's Guide from 1913.
No, I don't. I thought that was the former Minister of Defence.
No. He has the guy called Bradshaw, he wrote this book in 1913.
No, you're thinking of Michael Portillo.
No, I'm not.
You are?
No, I'm not.
You are?
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are. It's Michael Portillo who does the radio travels, railway travels, based on Bradshaw's Guide.
It's not on radio, it's on TV.
No, radio was a mistake. That was a slip of a tongue.
Oh. Well, then mine was too, if I'm wrong.
No, you're definitely thinking of Michael Portillo. You're definitely confusing Michael Portillo with Michael Palin, I hope. Because if we're married for another 15 years, I'll always be able to beat you with this
stick. Hang on, Michael Palin's Great Railway Journeys,
really?
BBC series.
Are you sure? I thought he used to go around the world and to Korea.
You can buy the box set on Amazon.
And he did a railway series at the same time as Michael Portillo.
Maybe.
Are
it's
you
a
certain?
Coincidence.
Okay.
I'm as certain as I can be.
All right.
How about that?
OK, Sam, would you like to get in here for a quick quiz or would you like to do your quiz, you versus Hayley, from where
quiz.
You are? This is based on a book called The Meaning of Lif, which was written by John Lloyd, the television producer who I think was involved in things like The Young Ones, and Douglas Adams, who wrote, amongst other things, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So these are men who know a bit about being funny. And what they've done is they've got together a book which is a list of all the strange place names in Britain. OK? Not like Aberystwyth, but sort of like Aberystwyth.
Like Ossletwistle.
Where's that?
In Lancashire, near Preston.
There you are. Exactly.
Or Cockfosters.
Cockfosters.
Yes.
Yes, wasn't that a good advert with the Australian guy? Paul Hogan. He's standing on the platform and dressed as an Australian and somebody is advertising Foster's beer and
right.
Somebody comes up to him and says, "Excuse me, what's the best way to Cock Foster's?" And he replies, "Drink it warm." And then he goes, "Funny question." Anyway, what I've got in front of me is, again, credit to the deeper meaning of life. I've got a place name and then three possible words that place name could become. Right, because we need words for certain experiences that have no words. Are you kind of with me? For example, is an Abinger is a place I think in Hertfordshire, is an Abinger one who washes up everything except the frying pan, the cheese grater and the saucepan which the chocolate sauce has been made in?
That's me!
Or is an Abinger one who prides himself over Christmas on not knowing what day of the week it is?
Oh.
Or is an Abinger to beat an expert at a game of skill by playing so appallingly that none of his clever tactics or strategies are of any use to him? What is an Abinger?
So should we take a guess each then?
Okay,
I'd go
first,
for the
Hayley.
Middle one, the Xmas one.
The Christmas?
Between Christmas
no,
and
I was
New Year.
I was going for the last one there to beat someone.
Well, I'm afraid no points.
No.
Because an Abinger is someone who washes up everything except the cheese grater.
No way!
And is that you, Hayley? You don't
that is me. I don't do the difficult bits.
You should end up grating your fingers then, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. It's just too much like hard work.
Is
this true, by the way?
Question two. Is an Absecon, right? This is a place in Lincolnshire, I believe.
Right.
Is it the worn patch of ground underneath a swing?
Why is it warm?
Worn. No.
Oh, I thought you said warm.
Worn. No.
Right.
Sorry. Or is an Absecon an annual conference held at the Dragonara Hotel Leeds for people who haven't got any other conferences to go to?
Oh, I hope it is. I need that to be the answer.
Or is an Absecon the act of bouncing cheerfully on a hotel bed, like you do. You go
like
in your hotel.
That.
You bounce. Whoa.
Well, that's a simple way of getting joy, isn't it?
But
I like
what's
that.
An absicon? Which of those things? Sam, you're first this time.
I'm going to go for the conference. Because, like, I'm thinking with the first one, that doesn't need a name, surely.
What, the worn patch of ground under a swing?
Yeah. Like,
well, what do you call it?
Well, no, but you don't... That's the thing, it doesn't need a name. So, like, the only reason that you put words to it is when someone needs to use it for some reason.
You're getting a bit technical for
sorry.
This, but that's good.
I'm competitive, I want to win this.
You do, don't you? Okay. What is it? You're saying
see,
the
I actually going like the that answer.
Which
because
one?
I think there's always a name for stuff that doesn't even need a name. So I'm going to go for the first one because of the reason that he said.
You're going to say that an absecon is the worn patch of grass under a swing.
Because every time you touch it to get that little bit higher next time you swing up and down.
Well, OK, well, you're very persuasive, but you're wrong.
Oh.
The answer is that, Sam is right, an absecon is the annual conference held at the Dragonara Hotel Leeds for people who haven't got any other conferences to go to.
I love this.
It's sort of like a game of Border Dash. Did you ever play that over Christmas?
Now, what is a bed font? Bed font is a place in West London, southwest London.
Right.
What is a bed font? Is it the small bone buttons placed in bacon sandwiches by unemployed dentists? Or is it a lurching sensation in the pit of the stomach experienced at breakfast in a hotel, occasioned by the realisation that it is about now that the chambermaid will have discovered the embarrassing stain on your bottom sheet?
if that's not the right answer, I can't believe someone wrote that.
Or is a bed font the technical name for a stallion after its first ball has been cut off? Any notice which reads, beware of the bed font, should be taken very, very seriously. So what is a bed font? The small piece of bone placed in bacon sandwiches by unemployed dentists. A lurching sensation when you realise that the chambermaid has just discovered the embarrassing stain on your bottom sheet. Or is it the technical name for a stallion after its first ball has been cut off? Hayley, you're first.
I really like the second one, so I'm going for the second one, the stain on the sheet.
The stain on the sheet the chambermaid discovers whilst you're having breakfast. Sam?
No, I'm going to go for the stallion.
Stallion. That's a point to Hayley.
Oh, get in!
Because it is indeed a bed font. It's that funny feeling you have at breakfast, knowing that she's just... For it probably is a she, but not necessarily modern. OK, what is a benburb? A benburb is a place in Lancashire.
Of course.
But is a benburb the sort of man who becomes a returning officer? Is a benburb the triumphant slamming of a book after reading the final page? Or is a benburb one who beams benignly after burping? What is a benburb? Sam.
I'm going to go for the first one.
The sort of man who becomes a returning officer. Hayley?
I like it, the slamming of the book.
The slamming of the book after reading the final page. Point to Sam. A benburb is a person who becomes a returning officer. Last one for the moment, and then we will return to this, because it's going quite well. It's generated three or four laughs. I hope you've picked up one or two points at home, or maybe even had a laugh. What is a Berkhamsted? Is it...
Ooh.
The irrevocable and sturdy fart released in the presence of royalty.
Oh, come on.
Which sounds like quite a small motorbike passing by, but not enough to be confused with one.
We've all done it.
A Berkhamsted. Is it the massive three-course mid-morning blowout enjoyed by a dieter who has already done his or her slimming duty by having a spoonful of cottage cheese for breakfast? Or is it the unknown workmate who writes all the best on your leaving card?
I've done that millions of times!
What is a Berkhamsted? The irrevocable fart... made in the presence of royalty. The massive blowout by somebody who's on a diet, which they justify because they've just had a spoonful of cottage cheese for breakfast. Or an unknown workmate who writes all the best on your leaving card.
That's brilliant. Who's first? I've forgotten now.
I think it's you.
Hayley.
Oh, I'll go for the diet one.
The diet one of Burke Hampstead is the diet.
I want to go for the leaving card.
The leaving card. The leaving card's the funny one, but the Burke Hampstead is indeed the massive mid-morning blowout enjoyed by a dieter, justified by the fact that they had a spoonful of cottage cheese.
I like this game.
It's a good game, isn't it? I think it's definitely got Channel 5 possibilities.
Mm. What would you call it?
The meaning of lift seems to spring to mind.
Okay. I wonder where he got that from. Don't know.
Sam, are you prepared to press some more buttons?
If I must.
Persuade some more people to spend money that on things that they hadn't thought about until 20 past 12 this Saturday morning. Quick look at the texts. The language being spoken in the voice messages. This is when we were trying to contact Greenland to find out about their experiences leaving the EU. Is Greenlandic, not Danish, says Jack. Mm-hmm. And the major mistake that the narrator of the Holographic Universe Workshop series of videos makes is the assumption on his part that the experiences we have downloaded to us as hapless receivers are from his own world, our infinite self. To the contrary, they are from a violently dispassionate group which regards us as so much fodder. Now, Hayley, do you have any idea what that was about?
No, I don't.
No.
Was it in Greenlandish?
Let's pick up with The Meaning of Life, part two, after this.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
And a text has flooded in from Paul in Clydebank. Whereabouts is Clydebank, Paul? Because somebody texted earlier to say that my surname Boyd means food in Wales, or Welsh, I should say. But the surname Boyd, I've done my ancestry.co.uk thing. We come from the island of Bute, which is in the Clyde.
Isn't that Glasgow?
Glasgow is further up the Clyde than Bute, which is out almost in the Atlantic Ocean. In fact, it used to be part of Ireland until about 600 years ago. Anyway, Paul says, so happy you're going to be talking about the meaning of lif. Brilliant. I came up with my own lif a couple of years ago, Groningen, which is a place, I presume. And Paul says his meaning of lif from Groningen is the frustrating act of trying to prise open a plastic bag at the supermarket checkout. Yes. Are you going to come and join us in the studio, Sam, or are you going to play through the glass screen? Just so that you're aware, good listener, that's the configuration of humanity.
I think it's... Can we just do a tally on the results? So I think I've got 7 and Sam's got 2.
It's so unimportant, and yet you care.
I really care.
You really care?
I do care.
It's just a game.
Part 2
it's
of...
never just a game, Sam. Never.
A quiz show based on and giving thanks to, but no money, I'm afraid, the deeper meaning of lif by the late Douglas Adams, who passed away a few years ago after a workout in a hotel... a gymnasium in California. He was out there negotiating another film based on Hitchhiker's Guide, and he went and did a workout. He was only 59 and passed away, but funny man. And so many thanks to The Meaning of Lif for this new quiz game, which is The Meaning of Lif takes mysterious place names in the United Kingdom and around the world and attributes to them meanings of things that we all know, but for which there is no word, not until now. Okay, so, who's first this time? Is it Sam?
Me, I think, yeah.
Right, Sam. Is an ashdod any object against which a smoker habitually knocks out his pipe? Give you some idea of when this was written. Is an ashdod the hairstyle a girl adopts for a special occasion which suddenly gives you a sense of what she will look like in 20 years? Or is an ashdod of waiters never to have a pen? An ashdod.
I'm going to say that it's when waiters never have a pen.
Never have a pen. Hayley?
I'm going to go for the hairstyle one.
The hairstyle. No points to anybody. An ashdod is any object that a smoker bangs a pipe up against. You two kids have never seen anybody bang a pipe out, have you?
No.
Nope.
So you don't know what we're talking about there. So I'll give you half a point for not mentioning the fact that you're young.
Am I?
Well, you're younger than me. younger than the average listener. Right. Next question. Is a Brough Sowerby, B-R-O-U-G-H, new word, Sowerby, S-O-W-E-R-B-Y, a place I believe in Shropshire, but I might be wrong, one who has been working at the same desk in the same office for 15 years and has very much his own ideas about why he's continually passed over for promotion? A Brough Sowerby? Or is it the fake antique plastic seal on a cheap whiskey bottle? Or is it the single unappetising bun left in the baker's shop after 4 p.m. A Brough Sowerby. Hayley.
I'm going to say the bread one, the bakery one, because sour could be sourdough. So there could be a link there.
You're definitely coming at this intellectually. I like that.
Oh, see, I was thinking, based upon the style of where the last one was, the old pipe, I'm going for the whiskey. Thinking it's
the whiskey. No points all round. A Brough Sowerby is somebody who's been working in the same desk for the last 15 years and has very much his own views about why he's being passed over for promotion.
Everyone one of those?
Yep.
Yeah. Probably, yeah.
We know someone like that? Everyone knows someone like that. A bude. Is a bude a nipple clearly defined through flimsy or wet material? A polite joke.
We both looked down there.
Did you? I
both of
that.
Us just instinctively just looked down.
Did you, dear listener? You can be honest with me, especially if you're in bed. When you heard the possibility that bude is a nipple clearly defined through flimsy or wet material, did you glance down? Interesting, isn't it?
Oh, dear.
Right. Or
moving
on.
Or is a bude a polite joke reserved for use in the presence of vicars? Or is a bude to fart underwater?
Oh, do we have to get onto that again?
You have a problem with farting?
I do.
It's a perfectly natural human thing.
I don't care. I don't want to talk about it on the radio.
A friend of my wife, when we were students, stuck to the protestation for the whole of the 3 years that we were fellow students together, that she had never in her life passed wind.
That's not possible, surely.
Which is a bude? To fart underwater? That used to be an Edward Woodward, didn't it? Do you remember the actor Edward Woodward?
No,
I say
name.
Remember him. Yeah. He's still around. Yeah, he was being interviewed by somebody, and the person said, Edward Woodward. He said, that sounds like a fart underwater. Edward Woodward, if you say it like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so is a bude a nipple clearly defined through the flimsy or wet material you're wearing, or a polite joke, or to fart underwater? What's a bude? Sam?
Are you reading these questions in order in the book, or are you picking random ones?
Yes.
To which one? What was the answer to?
Just yes.
Okay. Because I think it's been A twice in a row.
I know!
This is how I think on things.
Oh, he's clever! Now who's being competitive?
I'm going to go for it. It's a polite joke.
A polite joke? Hayley?
Can I go for the nipple one,
It is
please?
A nipple.
Yes, get
no,
in.
No, it's not. No, I'm wrong.
Oh!
It's a polite joke.
There we go. Oh. So it wasn't going to be A three times in a row.
Yes, it would have been. Right. Is a clathy the technical term for a single page of script for any from any Australian soap opera? A clacky. Clathy. Is it the sound made by knocking over an elephant's foot umbrella stand full of walking sticks? Or is a clathy being nervously indecisive about how to dispose of a dead light bulb? Because you are, aren't you?
Yeah, and it's like...
a dead light bulb.
Yeah.
What do I do with it? What do I do with this? Does it go in the pedal bin? Or the recycling? So which is a clathy? Hayley.
I'm actually going to go for the recycling one.
Nervously indecisive about how to dispose of a dud light bulb.
Yeah.
You can go for that one if you want, Sam, or you can...
Yeah, we've not agreed at all, but no, I was thinking it's going to be the
The points
elephant,
all round.
The elephant foot.
You've gone for the elephant's foot. Okay.
No, I changed my...
No, I'm
no,
sorry.
I would have said
the first
elephants.
Tentative answer that you almost form is the one I have to accept.
Okay.
Oh, there's rules to this game.
Oh, yes. Final one for the moment. Is a Clovis someone who actually looks forward to putting up the Christmas decorations in the office? B, A leg which has gone to sleep and has to be hauled around after you.
It's annoying when you sit on your leg, isn't it? And you try and get up and then you fall over.
Yeah, have you ever done that? You've had to haul it and it's dead. It's absolutely numb. You're worried that it's never going to get its feeling back, aren't you?
Yeah.
You start pummeling it.
I bash it.
Come on, come back to life. It gives you some idea of what Cyrano must have felt like in his death throes after being hit on the head with that rafter at the end of Cyrano de Bergerac by Rostam. No, it doesn't matter. Back to books again, you see. So, or is it people who just won't go?
Oh. Like at the end of the party and you want everyone to leave.
Mm-hmm. Or like when you finish a radio programme and we're standing there, nobody's quite sure who should make for the door first because it makes them look as though they can't wait to get away. I noticed that last night.
Really?
Yeah, we sort of stood together for about 12 seconds. in the sort of Talk Sport production area, where there was nobody else. And we kind of weren't sure who was going to go through the armoured door first.
Oh, I ran off for a wee. I remember that part.
You ran off for a wee, but you came back. And we kind of went, OK, then. And then we went down to the pavement in the middle of town, where it was completely deserted, and you'd all gone. Because you had taxis, didn't you?
Yeah.
And I took a...
I drove myself.
Anyway, what's your answer?
Oh, gosh, I've forgotten now.
What is a clun? One who looks forward to putting up Christmas decorations in the office. A leg that's gone
clun,
to sleep.
I thought it was a Clovis.
I thought it was a Cleith or something.
Is it? Let's call it a Clovis.
No, they're making up the rules now.
Let's move swiftly on. Is a Dalderby...
Just pass over that one. Never happened.
Yeah. Is a Dalderby a letter to the editor made meaningless because it refers to a previous letter that you didn't read? Have you ever had that in the letters section of newspapers? No, you haven't. Do you read the letters? Do you read? can you read?
Do you read? Full stop.
Can you read? You don't read the letters pages of newspapers?
No.
I've never read a newspaper.
Never read a newspaper.
No.
Good for you. Good for you. Who do you work for again? Is a Dalderby...
This is brilliant.
A letter to the editor made meaningless because it refers to an activity which you have no knowledge of because you don't even understand the piece of media that it relates to, Sam? Or is it to spend large swathes of your life looking for your car keys? Or is it a certain facial expression which actors are required to demonstrate their mastery of before they are allowed to play Macbeth?
Oh. That sounds like an actual answer, doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
It's the least funny answer that I've heard for the last 15 minutes.
You're going for a certain facial expression.
I'm going for the Macbeth answer.
Sam?
Yeah, I was thinking the same, to be honest.
No points. No. It's the letter to the editor made meaningless because it refers to a letter from a previous day that you haven't read. I get that. I'll tell you what happens most in The Guardian. In The Guardian, you're not allowed to write a letter to the letters page unless it refers to something that's in The Guardian.
Oh.
Which I find...
That's quite biased,
isn't it?
Mm.
But And preferably, it should be a reference to a letter that's appeared in The Guardian.
Mm.
So somebody writes in and says that they've got a crocus growing in their garden in December. And then you get this great long chain of people talking about crocuses and what happens in December, but you're not sure what generated it yourself unless you buy the damn newspaper every day. Mm. And who does that? Next one, Delaware. Is a Delaware the hideous stuff on the shelves of a rented house? Have you ever rented a house, Hayley?
No.
Ah, well. Sam?
Nope.
Never lived in a rented house?
Nope.
Well, there's hideous stuff on the shelves.
Isn't Delaware a place in the
States?
States.
Yes, it is. That's the whole point. These are place names.
Oh, I forgot that part.
Did you forget that part?
I thought it was just places in Britain.
Sorry?
I thought it was just places in Britain.
No. Britain or United Kingdom or elsewhere in the world.
I thought it was just words.
There was a song when I was a boy in the 1950s, and it actually got into the hit parade, and it was a series of puns about American states and places, right? And it started like this. What did Delaware, boys, what did Delaware... She wore a brand new jersey. She wore a and it was that bad all the way through. And it'll give you an idea of how naive adults were in the late 50s. A, they laughed at Norman Wisdom.
Oh.
B, they bought records like that.
Wow.
I know.
And they continued buying them after rock and roll started in America, because none of the music executives in this country thought rock and roll stood a chance. They said, no, let's go find another skiffle act. It was the Kids who brought rock and roll. Delaware. Is Delaware the hideous stuff in the shelves of a rented house? Is your Delaware the two little lines that come down from your nose? Or is a Delaware the part of the hymn, usually a few notes at the end of the verse, where the tune goes so high or so low that you suddenly have to change pitch to accommodate it? Hmm. What is a Delaware? Hayley.
I'm going to go for one or two, just because I know a little bit about music and I've never heard that term Delaware about, you know, with music theory. So no. I'd be disappointed if I didn't know that
well,
one.
You're right there. Is that is a debt chant. So yeah. What's a Delaware? The hideous stuff on the shelves of a rented house or the two little lines that come down from your nose, Hayley?
I'd say the nose one.
The nose one.
And I'm feeling them right now.
Sam?
I'm going for the stuff on the shelves in the rented
house. It is indeed the hideous stuff on the shelves of a rented house.
Is that where the term Tupperware comes from?
It could have related. It could have inspired somebody at the advertising agency, yes. What's interesting is two things, really. The second of which is the fact that this is vaguely amusing. The most interesting thing about this is how bloody competitive you two are at it. Yeah.
Well, why not?
I mean,
it's a game.
It's like
there needs to be a winner.
It's like sitting next to, I don't know, what's an analogy? Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn going at it.
I've never been compared to Theresa May.
All right, we'll try Jose Mourinho and Pep Guardiola then.
Oh, I don't know who they are.
All right, one more. How are you doing at home listening? Are you playing the game? Are you thinking to yourself the same things that I'm thinking, which is that it's quite a good game, but it's fascinating how competitive these two guys are. They both want to win.
No, who has this opinion loses, that's who has these opinions.
Yes.
One more before we pause, take breath, digest the fact that Sir Michael Palin is now Sir Michael Palin.
And doesn't do railway journeys.
Oh, yeah, that's what this was about.
That's and the where man, we started.
And the man in Greenland told us that there was division in Greenland before, during and after they decided to leave the European Union. But I think he also said that they were kind of happier that they did he not? Well, it's just me doing Brexit, OK? So you guys can just look glaze over, which, in fact, you did. Right, what is a deventer?
Oh.
Is a deventer a decision that's very hard to take because so little depends on it, such as which way to walk around a park? Is a deventer of the hands and feet the prune-like skin that you get after being overlong in the bath? Or is a deventer the tiny little circle of card which a ticket inspector cuts out of a ticket with his clipper for no apparent reason? It is a little-known fact that the contents at Princess Margaret's... No, the confetti at Princess Margaret's wedding was made up of thousands of deventers collected by inspectors on the royal train. So what's a deventer?
That's cool.
The tiny little...
And that's
round...
a place again.
Yes. Deventer is a place. Don't know where. I could find out if you really need to know.
No, I'm all right.
They won't get you bonus points.
I'm glad about that.
Yeah, shall we add bonus points in if we know where the places are?
Yes.
Great.
Is a deventer one of the tiny little circles of card that's cut from your ticket by a ticket inspector? Is it the prune-like skin you get after being too long in the bath? Or is it a decision that's very hard to take because so little depends on it, such as which way to walk around a park?
Who goes first? I've forgotten.
I think
Sam.
It's me. I'll go to the ticket inspector.
Ticket inspector's clippings.
I go for the bath one, the crinkly skin.
The bath one. No points all round. A deventer is a decision hard to take because so little depends on it, like which way to walk around a park. And I must admit, I struggle with some decisions because they're very small.
Mm-hmm.
Whether to put my cup of tea that I've finished and it's got those tea stains around it in the sink and come back to it later, or to actually rinse it straight away with a sponge and turn it upside down on a draining board. Because I'm heavily drawn to doing the former, but I know that the latter is marginally superior.
Mm.
But I'll still have to do it. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Yep.
So I think that was 57 to me and 17 to Sam, right?
Are you calling
you
it?
Yeah.
It's golf rules, though, yeah? So lowest wins.
Oh, no. So then in that case, it's 17 to me and 57 to Sam.
Sam, whilst you regroup and go and prepare your buttons and your positioners and your trailers and your commercials...
And cry because you lost.
And cry because you lost. a word with you, good listener. If you're under the covers, that's one thing. Good evening. And stay awake, because after 1 o'clock, you have an opportunity to hear the wit and wisdom of no less a broadcaster than Hayley...
Who?
Martin Kellner.
Martin Kellner.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know you, what you were asking me.
Fantastic guy. Brilliant bloke. And I totally forgive him that he once tried to get to nick my job. I'll have that out with him when he comes in to tell us about his programme.
Martin's actually off tonight. It's Daryl Morris covering.
Even better.
Just thought I'd mention that.
Even better in that I won't have to justify maligning him in the way that I just maligned the one and only Martin Kellner. And that happens after 1 o'clock. And we'll speak to you again with further fun, frolic, frivolity, and any other word you like, beginning with F, apart from one, after this.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Daryl, it will be with you from 1 o'clock here on Talk Radio. Myself, Tom, and Hayley and Sam, so far this evening, have discussed why potholes shouldn't get a purely bad press. Yes, they're not perfect, but they do have their plus points. We've been discussing that. We took a look at Greenland, speaking eventually to a Greenlander about the fact that Greenland is the only country to have left the EU so far, and what can we learn from their experience, which was that there was a rift. It sort of eventually healed, and they were quite glad in the end that they took the decision that they took. But the most interesting part of our pursuit of a live Greenlander to talk to during this evening's programme was definitely the weird answer phone messages that we got on most of the... Actually, Sam, if you get a moment, could you just get that second one up that was the sort of popcorn music? Because it was an insight into, I suppose, a little bit of what Greenlanders are like. We've also been talking about books this evening and books that have changed your life. We have had a quiz based on a book called The Deeper Meaning of Life or Life by Douglas Adams and John Lloyd.
Which I won. That's the important part to mention.
We've been talking about a book called The Joys of Yiddish by Leo Rosten, and seeing whether Hayley's knowledge of Yiddish, Hayley being Jewish. This is the answer phone message on one of the hotels in Greenland. This was 7 o'clock at night, by the way, in Greenland.
Hotel Icefjord, vi travlt. Prøv at vende senere. This is Hotel Icefjord. We are currently busy. Please try again later. Thank you.
Now, still busy.
He's making out that they're busy. So you get this impression, don't you, of a hotel where it's teeming. There's people in the lobby, people at the bar, people being thrown out the nightclub, people complaining that the disco's too loud and they can't hear themselves eat their fish. But it's not, is it?
No.
It just can't be arsed.
The music reminds me of the Magic Roundabout.
I was thinking that.
Doesn't it?
And it took me back to all those programmes that used to be on 5 minutes before the news on BBC when I was a boy and when you were a girl?
I think so, yeah, just about.
Magic Roundabout, what else do you remember?
Oh, what was the space one?
Eh?
That was the one with set in space.
No.
Rugrats. Remember the Rugrats?
Oh, Pingwing.
Yes.
Was that set in space?
Yes, I think so, that one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Beautifully weird.
And Rainbow, of course. Rainbow was my favourite.
But that was nothing to do with the programmes that went out just before the news at 6 o'clock on BBC
One. No, but
BBC
I'm just reminiscing.
One. What do you like about Rainbow?
I named my first cat, who was a love of my life, George, after the character George.
In Rainbow?
Yeah. It's that special to me.
If you YouTube Rainbow, you will find a blue version of Rainbow. And it happened when Jim Davidson descended on the Rainbow Studio and Jeffrey and myself happened to be in there with the puppets.
You've met Jeffrey?
The late Jeffrey?
Yeah.
Yes, oh yes.
Oh, can I shake your hand?
Okay.
You've met Jeffrey?
From Rainbow?
Yeah, that's cool.
Ever such a nice man.
Oh.
Ever such a nice man.
I'm suddenly starstruck.
Yeah,
because you've met
you
Jeffrey.
I went out for a drink with him once and we ended up in this little wine bar.
And we were just sitting there. And I don't know, it was funny because he's so like the Jeffrey that he plays in Rainbow, or he was, that there was something disconcerting about it, and yet at the same time reassuring. You know when people on television turn out to be what they're really like? It's both reassuring and at the same time slightly unsettling. Because he was talking to me as though I was seven most of the time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was as though he didn't want the conversation to develop much further than today's colour or favourite number, as I remember.
Yeah.
Because it might have been the fact that we were on the white wine. I don't know. What are we going to do tomorrow? This is Elfed, who has messaged. My format would be, for the Meaning of Lif game show, Adlif. Players are marked out of seven for new entries, e.g. Aylesbury is an embarrassing stash of hoarded empty alcohol containers versus the red nose of a habitual drinker or the frantic buying of drinks prior to a party. Mm. How's everyone's... Yes, you...
Elfed,
never quite
I think you
know.
Should give us a call tomorrow because this sounds like you might have something that we don't.
Yes, you never quite know how much booze to get in for a party, do you? And the big danger is that you've got a load left over and you've got to do something with it.
My problem is food. I always buy too much food.
Do you peel too many potatoes?
No, I don't peel potatoes. I've never peeled a potato in my life. Look, do I look like I'd peel a potato?
What's
I'm
wrong
a princess.
With peeling potatoes?
I don't peel things.
You don't peel things?
No.
Sounds like you peel a grape or have it peeled for you. Have you never peeled a potato?
I've never peeled anything.
Not like a carrot?
No.
Nothing?
I buy the ones that are cut up and you put them in the freezer.
Now, how do you cook potatoes then?
Put them in the oven, frozen ones. Well, my husband does it. My husband does the roast potatoes at Christmas. My husband does it. That's what you have husbands for.
So you've never experienced the fear, the dread that people feel when they've peeled the potatoes and they think to themselves, that doesn't look like enough. And they peel one more.
Oh, I know.
It's
always
a universal experience. Yeah. Of everybody apart from those who live in countries where rice is the staple provider of carbohydrate.
Mm. I bought 5 kilograms worth of potatoes.
Even
Christmas.
Walter Raleigh, who brought the humble potato back from the New World, experienced the dread of not being sure that he'd peeled enough potatoes. And you never have.
Oh, I'm always worried that I don't have enough food to feed people.
Sam, do you know what I'm talking about with the fear of not having peeled enough potatoes?
Yeah, of course. It doesn't just stop, it's everything.
Everything, isn't it?
Like, even with, like, spaghetti, I always put in way too much. Because, like, you have to
throw spaghetti.
Well,
do you know what you do with spaghetti, Hayley?
Actually, I recently learnt spaghetti and pasta, I have you know. Oh, I can. God. That is on my menu. Don't look at me like that.
Isn't you supposed to throw it at the ceiling? And if it sticks, then it's done. Is that the... Is that what you're on about?
I don't know about that, but what I do know is that I always cook too much spaghetti. And rice.
Yeah.
Way too much spaghetti. And because somebody once said that rice cannot be reheated, and if you do reheat it, I was told, it's poisonous, which of course it isn't, but I was told that, I was stuck with it. So I can't even put it in the fridge and throw it away 2 days later, which is what most people do, and what we do as well, with an awful lot of food that we cook too much of. We cover it with cling film, put it in the fridge, and then about 2 days later we go, do you think this broccoli's any good? No. And it goes in the bin.
We freeze rice.
How big a freezer have you got?
Only a small one. Only a small one.
What have you got in it?
Rice, potatoes, turkey now, obviously.
Yes.
Loads of turkey. Too much turkey. I've got some party food that we didn't end up eating at Christmas. We've got milk and a loaf of bread, just in case.
You freeze milk?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just in case the world ends and the co-op is shut, we've got milk and bread in the freezer.
Have you got anything in the freezer at the back, at the bottom, that would surprise you? Because we were talking about...
Oh, yes, the other day I found chilies and aloe vera. Aloe vera in my freezer. Seriously.
What is aloe vera again?
Aloe vera is a plant, the green plant, that's supposed to be really good for your skin.
Oh, I heard it cleaned you out.
Oh.
If you drink aloe vera, then you'll be regular. That's
good
what
tip
I heard.
There.
I don't know.
Thank you very much.
It's true. When we moved and we had an upright freezer in this little outhouse, I had to clear it out because we were moving and we wanted to take the freezer, but we didn't want to take the food that was in the freezer. So I went down and the usual thing, lots of oven chips and bags of this and that. And right at the very bottom, in a plastic carrier bag, was an octopus. I know.
Was it alive?
To this... No. Well, I don't know. I didn't try to revive it. I don't know. It might have come round.
Did you slap it?
I hadn't thought about that. Because there was that woman, wasn't there, who froze to death, and she was out up there for 8 weeks. And they found her. When they brought her back, they thought, I wonder if it's just going to be possible. So they gradually reheated her, and she was all right. It took her about a year before she could be completely cogent, but now she's absolutely normal. And she was frozen to death for 8 weeks. Well, at least frozen for 8 weeks, but something lived on in her, and they brought her round. I heard it on that podcast, the science podcast.
Where the monkey one?
Two Californian dudes do it. Oh. Stuff You Should Know, it's called. Oh. I don't know if you've heard of it.
No.
Yeah, I heard it on that. But anyway, the octopus was there. And here's the thing, I don't remember buying it. Obviously I did. But I couldn't remember buying it, where I bought it. Where would you buy an octopus?
A fishmonger's, possibly.
You don't see octopus.
I saw that on Come Dine With Me once, actually.
Somebody served octopus?
Yeah, and they got it from a fishmonger's.
I saw a dude when we were on holiday, and he was a person who lived there, and he roared up to the beach in his Citroen, and he ran down the beach and into the sea, and he had flippers, a snorkel, a mask, and strapped to his waist, very masculine, he had a huge dagger. And down he went, and he faffed around for a bit, and then suddenly this hand came up, like the hand holding the torch of the Statue of Liberty. And the hand was holding an octopus. And the octopus's tentacles were wrapped all round the man's arm. And he came up the beach holding his trophy, this octopus that he presumably caught and killed with his dagger, up the beach, marching past, right? And he thought he looked so magnificent. But the point is this, you cannot walk in flippers and look like a macho, magnificent man. You look like those guys in that end sequence at Mamma Mia. You know?
Yes.
I felt like saying to him, that's good, boy. But if you really want to do the matador thing, and most Spanish men do a little bit, don't they? The matador thing, you know, the old chest out.
Chest out.
And the old... I wanted to say to him, you know, just style tip, take the flippers off and carry them. Time to check blood pressure. We've been asked by listener...
I've got your reading from 10:16 tonight. Let's compare.
At 10:16, my blood pressure read what?
187 over 186.
Okay. It's going to be way down on that.
I hope so. I hope we've chilled.
Because that was after that I opened the show with
a monologue. Oh, okay.
A monologue.
I think you said rant at one point.
I did, but I'm allowed to be tabloid. You're supposed to keep us, you know, on the. The recherche side of broadcasting. Well, it's going down a little bit. I think my pulse... I'm going to guess my pulse. Have you taken your blood pressure recently, dear listener? Yes, it's you I'm talking to. When was the last time you took your blood pressure? Mm-hmm. When was the last time you checked your pulse? It's 167 over 107.
Oh, wow.
That's down.
That's really huge.
But is it?
Radio is good for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we know that anyway.
I hope it's good for the listener. That's their decision. And my pulse is 66. So...
Do you want me to do mine as well?
Yes, please. Oh. Just quickly, you know how to do it. Get that shirt off. Because we need a bare arm, obviously. I like to nipple jokes.
that was brilliant.
You enjoyed that, didn't you? Yeah. Is it a reflex that everybody has when they hear the word nipple, they look down? She doesn't want to answer the question. Sam, I'm surprised that you look down at your own nipples when you... heard the word.
Why? I have nipples. So.
I know you have nipples, but they're not such a... they don't have the same sort of, you know, cultural impact, male nipples. That's why we're allowed to show them in public.
Okay.
I've never understood that, why women cannot show their nipples in public, but men can.
That's yeah, such a
doesn't mean men should.
As well.
Say again?
Doesn't mean that men should.
Should show their nipples. No, I'm not saying they should, but, you know, you wouldn't... cause a kerfuffle if you walked down, you know, if you walked across the bull ring in Birmingham with your shirt off, people would just go, oh God. But if a woman did it, then there would be, you know, there'd be It hit the newspapers. Okay, we're rushing towards the 1 o'clock show, and as we do, we get the news.
I think I've died.
Hayley is dead.
So zero.
It'll be Sam, me, and a shadow producer with you tomorrow from 10 o'clock. So thanks for your company. Talk to you then.